space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission:
to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0, blast off!
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
Listening to Mad Science at www.shazizradio.com. If you want to join in on the chat, jump over there to the superchat.html, and as well go over down, scroll down underneath the chat room when you get on the super chat. If you want to look over there to People for People Radio and go over and say hi to those wonderful folks, I'm sure they'd appreciate your visit. Might even make you a new friend. Anyway, Mad Science. I guess I've been explaining Mad Science multiple times, trying to get people to understand what it is that Mad Science is all about. There's all kinds of things going on out there in this world. all kinds of people seeking solutions to problems that exist everywhere on this place we call Earth. And I don't know, maybe sometimes I think that I'm smarter than I really am or something. But sometimes it seems like the last thing that ever gets utilized is common sense. You know, when you go through your government indoctrination center that they call schools, and you learn all the things about science and mathematics and everything else, you expect to come up out of there with a little bit of knowledge and education and go out into the world and try to make it a better place or something, or at least make yourself a good life. But then, you know, as you get my age, you get later on in years and you're watching all the things around you going crazy and wars and rumors of wars and plagues and famines and pestilence and all the things that you've heard in all the stories of doom and gloom in life. It gets frustrating. It gets frustrating to see things broken and not be able to fix it. Going through a personal issue right now with some family members, one of which probably won't be with us much longer, and the other one probably not far behind. But in the last few days, I've had some time quite longer than the last few days, but most generally in the last couple of days, I've had a lot of time to contemplate on the modern healthcare system, which as fancy as all the buildings are, and you know, maybe they got a really awesome facility and all kinds of fancy equipment, they just don't seem to have the knowledge necessary to understand enough about science and biology and everything, how things tick, in order to be able to fix a problem that they come across. And they also have a lot of red tape and hierarchy and all this kind of stuff that you gotta weed your way through in order to be able to get insurance paid and things done and get the care needed. You know, I wonder how they did it way, way back in the days before doctors and hospitals. And I'm almost to the extent where I think that potentially better off back then than they are in modern day facilities. So mad science to me is a whole lot more than just, you know, connecting some wires and sparks and, you know, explosions and all the cool stuff with doing experiments in electricity and chemistry and whatever. It's about the frustration that comes around from the science community out there that's supposedly, you know, learning and fixing and trying to teach the world how things work. Science isn't science anymore. At least not the science that I was taught as a child and as I was growing up through life. And so when you see things out there and you really seriously paid attention in school, you paid attention in science class, and you paid attention to how nature actually functions, and you develop an understanding of how things work, and then you try to watch as people continue to repeat the same ridiculous mistakes over and over, and then when somebody steps forward with a solution, there's nobody there to listen, and actually very few there to even understand what it is that you're trying to convey to them. It's aggravating. If I see a problem in this world and I start to troubleshoot it in my mind and with the tool that we call the internet, and I find all these different ideas and solutions out there, and I try to bring them to the table, you know, I might get somebody to listen to me to the extent that, yeah, you know, that sounds like it might possibly work, but they're never really willing to go the distance to actually make it so. It seems that people have been so trained to relying on the system that they will trust the doctors all the way to the grave. Now I'm going to play a little podcast for you real quick. And it's one of the things that one of the reasons why I call this mad science. But I'm going to play this real quick and just listen in. This is about hyperbaric chambers and treatments, how it works.
It makes you feel good when you come out of the chamber.
My experience with the oxygen chambers has been a positive one.
People who have wounds probably don't know about it, which is too bad.
Fast track the road to recovery with hyperbaric oxygen therapy, a non-invasive, safe, and effective medical treatment which enables the body's natural process to take over. Hyperbaric oxygen therapy is administered in high-pressurized chambers where a patient breathes 100% oxygen while the pressure of the chamber is slowly increased above atmospheric pressure.
It's coming into the back of the chamber, coming down through the sides here, actually coming out to those two white tubular areas there, and it's vented out right there at the bottom.
The increased pressure allows the oxygen to reach bone and tissue, encourage white blood cell formation, promote the new creation of peripheral and capillary vessels, and support the body's fight to heal itself. Hyperbaric Services of the Palm Beaches is the leading provider of hyperbaric oxygen therapy in South Florida, and the center is the first independent freestanding facility in Palm Beach County. Located on the grounds of Delray Medical Center, Hyperbaric Services of the Palm Beaches features three top-of-the-line Seacrest oxygen chambers in a brand-new state-of-the-art facility. Prior to treatment, vital signs are taken and ears are checked. For diabetic patients, sugar levels are monitored pre- and post-treatment.
How are you feeling, Morris?
Each hyperbaric session involves three phases: compression, treatment time, and decompression. Patients may experience pressure in their ears, similar to what is felt on ascent and descent in an airplane. Treatments range from 60 to 120 minutes.
There's different pressure protocols set up for different types of treatments. Your wound care treatments go to a deeper depth for a longer period of time.
Hyperbaric therapy has been proven effective for treatment of non-healing wounds when standard conventional wound care has shown no measurable signs of improvement. The breakdown of tissue and lack of perfusion can be the cause of many such wounds.
I have not had a failure with hyperbaric oxygen therapy. Some patients take longer during duration of therapy. They may need 75 treatments, some may take 90, but most patients usually resolve their clinical problems within the time frame allowed.
I came to hyperbarics on the recommendation of a plastic surgeon who was working on my foot. In fact, I was in the hospital recently, and he took me out of the hospital because I couldn't get my oxygen on a daily basis. So he said, I'm better off at home to get the oxygen every day than I am to stay in the hospital.
Treatments deliver the high concentration of oxygen needed to promote the development of new capillaries for improved healing following surgery for skin grafts and compromised flaps. Dr. Marmon Ellison is more than just the medical director of Hyperbaric Services of the Palm Beaches.
I'm a patient too. I've got a diabetic ulcer on my left leg. It's been grafted, and especially when it's grafted, hyperbarics is very useful. And it's made a big change just this last week. It's almost covered over. It's just a small area left.
Necrotizing soft tissue infections, radiation necrosis, osteomyelitis, and radiation injury are other wounds that benefit from hyperbaric oxygen treatment.
And I'm being treated for an ongoing skin cancer, with which the doctors are very, very happy with the results so far. Yeah. I went to see the reconstruction doctor yesterday. We were talking about putting in a graft, but the wound has progressed so nicely. But if I have to have a graft, it will be a very, very small one.
The benefits of hyperbaric oxygen therapy are not limited to wound care. The therapy has been proven successful in a range of neurological disorders, from stroke to multiple sclerosis to autism and cerebral palsy. Benefits are also being seen in the fields of dentistry, sports medicine, and anti-aging.
I know my foot healed up, and that's important because they were going to cut off my foot. Save my life.
For many patients facing challenging conditions with little hope, oxygen therapy and hyperbaric services of the Palm Beaches are united to help pave the way for a promising road to a full recovery.
So that's just one of many things out there of alternative, what basically would be classified as alternative medicine, that really don't make it too much into the mainstream. Now, hyperbaric chambers have been used for celebrities and athletes to help for anti-aging or reducing aging effects or even reversing aging effects, and it's also been used to help athletes to be able to heal faster from injuries that they get, you know, out there on the field or whatever. And so these are technologies that if a person understands how the body actually functions, can, you know, speed up healing time. It's quite literally, you know, I would almost go to say a miracle cure kind of thing. You know, there's a lot of alternative medicines out there that, you know, have a lot of good health benefits that they just don't seem to make it to the mainstream. And so, you know, how's that to apply to mad science? Well, you know, I got a family member who's going through a really bad time right now, has a whole lot of health issues, and, you know, and basically he's at a stage where he's got a really nasty wound, and it just won't heal up, and he's developed an infection, and I just can't seem to find out which strain of bacteria is causing the infection, in order to be able to give him the right kind of antibiotics and get it into the you know, area to work on the wound and all that kind of stuff. So his life clock is ticking down. And in the same facility, they actually have one of these hyperbaric chambers, but it's never even been mentioned as an option to his problem. And so, you know, this technology that is already out there, basically, you can see it's anywhere from $150 to $250 per treatment. What you may need as many as 75 treatments for, you know, getting something resolved or whatever. I posted these links over there into the Super Chat room. If somebody wants to post them somewhere else, let somebody else take a look at these deals. And, you know, the one is a little bit longer. It's hyperbaric oxygen therapy, wound healing, and anti-aging. It's probably about a 35-minute video, but there's a lot of good information. And even at the end, it'll tell you a little bit about possible side effects or something like that, and, you know, it's a really well-informed video as far as I'm concerned. That's why I feel like it's worth sharing. So I did post these on Facebook, so if you're connected to my Facebook, you'll be able to find them as well. Or if you jump over there to my YouTube channel, they're in my liked video sections. I always I got a list of liked videos that I see for alternative energy and other things that I think is important and might help people out. So, you know, I watch a lot of people suffer needlessly for a lot of things. And in this world, whether it be, you know, not being able to get fresh water into certain areas, not being able to, you know, have energy like such as electricity or heating and cooling and that kind of stuff, in what they classify as third world countries. And I watch all this, and even in America, you know, there are different sections of society that aren't doing as well as everybody else, you know, up in the higher echelons, I guess. Seems like these days, if you want to live, you better have a lot of money. If you want to live comfortably, you better have even more money. You know, and the insurance, the way that the insurance and everything goes about, it's crazy. Steven's asking me some questions in the chat room about, let me try to get back up there. Trying to troubleshoot a few things. Well, this is really terrible for radio, and I'm a terrible reader. He said, the one with diabetes, did you research true cinnamon, hemp oil, and lemon juice? I know the two people who have cured theirs with it. I did check into hemp seed oil, and actually, he was actually using hemp seed oil, which was helping out. But there's a whole combination of things going on at one time that, because he's got diabetes, that his body is not being able to heal a wound quick enough. And because he's really not following, suggestions such as not going out on the farm and stressing this wound and trying to keep it away from anything like insect bites or, you know, dust or anything like that, you're fighting almost a losing battle, because the moment it becomes infected, then it becomes a matter of whether or not you can get proper antibiotics to it quick enough to do anything to fight off that infection while you're trying to get the body to heal the wound. And so when I was looking at these hyperbaric chambers and understanding how they actually function, and how, you know, basically you have a heavier atmosphere, you pressurize these containers and you flood them with high concentrates of oxygen, which allows this to be compressed into the body and get oxygen to places where it's not able to get to. And so as I'm looking at this and I'm talking to a vascular surgeon, I'm thinking in my mind that of a possible solution for somebody who can't necessarily afford a hyperbaric chamber. So I've figured out a way by which you could actually with a sterile unit localized to the wound, be able to put oxygen pressure on the outside, and be able to, with a breathing apparatus, be able to put oxygen, higher concentrates of oxygen, into the lungs and try to attack it from both sides in order to be able to fight the infection and actually get oxygen into the soft tissues in order to be able to promote healing. And by getting, because he's got a low blood flow going down his leg because of a graft that failed on him, but he's still got other veins where he's getting some circulation too, so there is blood flow getting down there, so there is oxygen, but not enough to give it the strength to heal that wound. And so it's kind of a unique, special kind of case, but either way, I called up a couple different doctors, one of them that was involved, and the other one who's part of vascular research, and tried to find out where to submit an idea, such as the method of being able to use what the hyperbaric chamber does externally without having to be inside of a tank, but getting, as close to those benefits as you possibly could. And to find somebody who you can submit an idea such as what I'm talking about to is like looking for a needle in a haystack. And it really frustrates me because there are a lot of brilliant ideas out there in this world that just kind of go unnoticed, because if you don't have that a doggone college degree or, you know, doctorate or whatever the heck, all those different papers that you get whenever you spend thousands of dollars to go to college to be told that things aren't possible and, you know, this is the only way or whatever, it's almost impossible to get anything done. So, at the stage that I'm at right now, let me see, I'm going to try to add Raymond in here. Hold on a second. Do-do-do-do-do. So anyway, so there's all kinds of medical treatments out there that are available in this world, but they're just not they're not focused. Most of the folks that have injuries have no idea that the hyperbaric chamber even exists or what it even does. And you would think that in the healing industry or medical industry or whatever, doctors, hospitals, whatever, they would want to try to bring every possible option to the table and allow people to know that they have options available to them. But this specific case that we're dealing with our family member is that, surgery's off the table because they've already been through 3 surgeries, and amputation's off the table for obvious reasons. They didn't want that as well. And so now it's just a matter of being able to figure out how to get ahead of an infection before the infection basically, kills him. And so the doctors are running culture tests and trying to find out what exact bacteria is actually causing the problem, so that they know what type of antibiotics to treat them with, and to be able to know whether they can do it in pill form or whether it has to be through an IV, and that would require some other things and possible more stay into the hospital. Anyway, It's really a troubling situation. There are methods by which that you could potentially save this limb and his life and all that kind of stuff, but they're pretty doggone expensive. Hi, Raymond. How you doing? I can hear you in the background there.
Excellent, partner. I hope it's not too loud. Podcast you played, right at the very beginning, they said something that didn't make sense to me, and I'm pretty sure it was just a typographical error when they wrote up the thing for the guy to say. He said something about 100% oxygen. My understanding is if you were to breathe 100% oxygen, it would literally burn your lungs out. Now, maybe I'm wrong, maybe I'm not, I don't know.
Well,
I think it was just a typo, and what they meant was if the oxygen level is measured to where it's safe for you to breathe.
Yeah, that's...
Again, I've done a little bit of research, very little, but a little bit of research on that hyperbaric oxygen treatment, and it does sound very viable, The thing is, if you talk about it too much, and don't know what you're talking about, people to try and actually hurt themselves, because that's something that's very dangerous. Oxygen is good, you can't live without it, but if a little bit does a little bit of good, doesn't mean necessarily that a whole lot of good, I mean a whole lot's going to do you a lot of good.
Well,
it's like arsenic itself, it's a poison, but you have to take the heart medicine.
I understand what you're saying, but if people go out there to take these types of treatments, there are actual medical facilities that have these, and they already know the protocols for actually doing it properly.
That's my point. People shouldn't go out there and be experimenting with oxygen, like breathing 100% oxygen, do your research before you get involved in something like this. If you don't have the money, okay, that's fine. You try it. I mean, I personally, well, I'm an ex-welder. I'm kind of semi-retired right now. But there was a time when I had a lot of problems, you know, with different things, and I just couldn't think properly. So I just grabbed one of my oxygen tanks from my oxygen acetylene cutting rig, brought it in my office, and I've got an oxygen sniffer, which actually measures the percentage of oxygen in the air, and I just made sure that I didn't get too much, and I just cracked the bottle open just a little bit and let it run and got my air in my office really oxygenated rich, but not to the point that it was hurting. And sure enough, after about 3 or 4 days, I was fine.
Science says that there was a time in history where the Earth had a higher barometric pressure and it had higher amounts of oxygen, and things grew a lot larger, such as trees and animals and stuff like that. And then over the time, you know, over time that kind of changed and everything is a little bit smaller or whatever.
So
there is historical evidence of how pressure and oxygen actually affects the human body. And with this hyperbaric oxygen therapy out there, there's a lot of possibilities there for helping a lot of different people, and including diabetics, because diabetics have a harder time of being able to heal wounds. And so with this, it actually gets oxygen into areas where it couldn't otherwise have got, you know, in the quantities that they're talking about.
Right. So, you know, the thing is, you said something about a family member with a wound. Now, the thing is, that's all you said. What kind of a wound are we talking about?
Well, basically what happened was that this individual, which is my father-in-law, was having some problems with circulation and some problems in his feet where he wasn't getting enough blood flow. So he went to the hospital, and the vascular surgeon suggested to do a graft to put in basically a bypass.
Right.
And
okay.
So they did it the first time, and something went wrong the first time, and it didn't work out so well. And they did it a second time around, went in, repaired it, because the first one, I think, got a clot. And so they got that fixed. And then in the process of doing it, something else went wrong, and they end up having to go in a third time.
Wow.
The third time around, whenever they took the stitches out, one of the nurse practitioners took the stitches out, in my opinion, too early, and a wound opened up, and wouldn't heal. And so they kept doing things, debriefing it and all this kind of stuff, which basically scraping off stuff to make sure there wasn't no infection so they could see underneath it and whatever, and kept putting on medical honey and hydrogel in order to keep the wound moist and drawing infection to the surface so that they could keep cleaning it and dressing it. Well, it got to such a tormenting level for him that he couldn't take it anymore, so he decided that he was going to go home and try to treat it for himself, which he did. And so everything was going along well. The only, of course, if you ain't having any more surgery, and if you ain't having access to a medical doctor or whatever, the only thing that they used to use back in the old days was basically a whirlpool, where you use that with the water circulating to help to get oxygen to it, plus be able to wash away any crud, and then also the stimulation of that that whirlpool.
Right.
And so using the whirlpool and using cleaning solutions, saline solution to clean it, and rebandaging it and all that, everything was going along fine. The foot was healing. Even though the doctor said that he wasn't getting any circulation down there, he wasn't losing his foot. His foot was getting better. The wound was getting better. And somehow or another, out there on the farm, he either got from a chigger bite or a tick. He had pulled a tick off around the area somewhere on his knee, and one of those three, either the chigger bite or the tick, or possible some sort of combination between heat and dust on the farm, caused it to develop an infection, which then caused swelling, and from that swelling caused a lot of pain. And from that point on, the whirlpool wouldn't be any use until you fought off that infection.
Right.
And so essentially our only option would be to take him to the hospital to get them to give him antibiotics that it would fight that infection, and then continue the process of treating the wound on a regular basis.
Right.
Well, then he went to the hospital, and you know, they started trying to find antibiotics and tried to do all that kind of stuff, and it basically deteriorated from that point on down. The infection got—I wouldn't say worse, but the wound itself got worse, and the actual physical look of the leg, because I don't feel that they were addressing it, you know, like we were doing, where, you know, the stimulation of the blood and the you know, cleaning of it the way that we were doing that, and, you know, constantly dressing this wound. But either way, it's to the point now where at one point he had option for surgery, and then he rejected the surgery because he'd been through it three times already and he was tired of all the surgeries. Well, that took surgery off the table. And then the next option in line, because of the infection and possibility of gangrene setting in, would be the amputation. Of course, for obvious reason, amputation's off the table. So the only option available now would be, according to how the doctors and all that do the work, would be for him to... for them to find out which strain of bacteria is causing the infection, be able to get that antibiotic, the proper antibiotic, and get that infection, get ahead of that infection, get it under control. And he could still, at this point, be able to save his leg and his life, even though he would still have that wound that probably wouldn't heal because it has really low circulation. It needs to have more oxygen to that wound. It needs to be able to do what nature does naturally, and there are certain things that can't live in a highly enriched oxygen environment. There's all kinds of benefits to having, you know, oxygen, hyperbaric oxygen therapy, that would be another option on the table. But at this stage in the game, because of his age, there's you know, possible complications due to other health problems that could, you know, come about. And so, after factoring in every single thing and going through the process, the only thing that, you know, we can do as far as home remedy would be the whirlpool and the treatment of the wound. However, we have no way to treat the doggone infection, and so until the infection gets under control, we're racing the clock in order to get that wound to heal up. And so, after talking to a vascular surgeon and listening to all the doctors and all their advice and everything that they're going to talk about, I was you know, using my mechanical brain to try to find a less expensive but just as effective solution. And what I pretty much came up with was an idea on how to replicate the hyperbaric, what's going on in the hyperbaric chamber, without actually have to be in the hyperbaric chamber, with a sterile, localized to the wound, essentially a patch that would be able to be pressurized to higher pressures with a lot of concentrated oxygen inside the bubble. So essentially what this would do would be, it would give a basically a compressed, highly concentrated oxygen directly to the wound, and then with regular oxygen treatments like they have for respiratory problems and stuff like that, be able to give him more oxygen to his lungs. And so even with his low circulation, he would have a little bit more oxygen available going down towards that wound area and be able to help fight off infections that way. So anyway, in order to try to get something like that out there into, you know, the medical industry where other people could benefit from that, you know, this may be to a point where it won't benefit him at all because of how long this has actually progressed. But if this idea to doctors and, you know, with all the science available to it, is plausible and is something that could actually benefit people, it's worth continuing to look into even after, you know, worst case scenario is and he's no longer with us, that kind of thing. So I wanted to bring that to the table. And, you know, I'm just, the world's got a lot of problems. And I just can't fix it. I just can't seem to get the people to hear possible solutions. And, you know, I don't claim to have every answer to every problem out there. But what I do see is that there are so many different options available. But majority of the people who have wounds, who have health issues, they're not being informed about, you know, any alternative medicines when the mainstream, like the guy was saying, when the mainstream medicine ain't doing the job, there's other types of possible treatments that could actually help to heal these conditions. And the one guy in that podcast was talking about they wanted to cut off his foot. The hyperbaric saved his foot and his life. And, you know, I understand, and I get it. You know, people say the cycle of life, you know, the man's 80 years old and maybe he's ready to just cash in his chips or whatever like that. I get all that, all right? But to not seek every single possible option, to try to at least put that as a possibility in order to save a person's life or to make them have a better quality of life. And from every bit of research that I've done on hyperbaric oxygen therapy, there are so many potential benefits from
that. Now you're starting to talk the way I think. I mean, duh, this is a life cycle, and maybe it's time to cash in the ship. To me, that's bull. I mean, look, a person gets old, all right? Eventually, their clock winds down. That's one thing. But to get an infection and that take you out? No, that's not right.
Well, I mean, that's what I'm saying.
My thing is, try everything, especially those things that will not hurt, but might cure. Why not?
Well, that's like hemp seed oil, you know? I tried it myself. It works for me, all right? Maybe it won't work for somebody else, but hemp seed oil does work. I took a teaspoon a day, every day, for quite a long time, but it only took about a week or so before I actually started noticing noticeable results. And my condition is basically improved. As far as I'm concerned, I'm healed of the problem that I had to take it begin with, but I still take it as a preventive kind of thing. And it works for me.
Right.
You know? And so these are things that you don't, when you go to the doctor, they don't tell you about hemp seed oil. They don't say, well, you know, there's a lot of possible benefits for this, or even, you know, other things. There's a website out there called eattheseeds.com. Talks about benefits of fruit trees and
fruit seeds and stuff. Yes, I've been on that website several times. It's amazing.
Well, this is why mad science to me is so important. Because when mainstream science pretty much says, well, this is the way, and if this way don't work, there's no other alternatives, you know. And the medical industry, you know, while they do take a well, I guess they call it a Hippocratic oath not to do any harm, you know, the system itself, the way the system is set up, it causes them to either unintentionally or even intentionally produce harm by not putting every option available for people to be able to utilize.
Well, here's my thought on that, what you're talking about. There are so many options out there. No one human being could possibly live long enough to learn them all. You know, the thing is, closed-minded doctors, that, to me, that's the problem.
Well, yeah, but see, in this facility, the same facility that he is being treated in, they actually have a hyperbaric chamber. All right, it's actually on site. There is a hyperbaric chamber right there, but not one of his doctors or nurses had even contemplated on it, let alone, you know, bringing it up to the subject. And so now that I'm, you know, thinking about this, and I told his daughter and his son about the potential that this is, you know, something that could be, you know, something to get the infection under control, because when you're using the hyperbaric deal and the doggone antibiotics, the hyperbaric conditions help that antibiotic work better, because there are things in the body that the hyperbaric pressure and oxygen can get to that can assist that process of the doggone antibiotics doing its job. So they complement one another. And so if they found the right strain of antibiotics and they started these treatments of the hyperbaric, not only could he they could be able to heal his wound, but they could get those antibiotics to be more efficient, to work better. But
yep, that's right. I mean, the thing is, I mean, does the man have, well, 80 years old, you know he's retired, right? So he's getting, what, Medicaid or Medicare,
yeah,
something like
Medicaid,
that.
Yeah, Medicaid, and that's the thing right there. Because hyperbaric in hospitals is really, really expensive.
Right.
It is approved by the FDA, and so... So it is covered by Medicaid to some extent, and it depends on which facility you're at whether or not it is covered by Medicaid. Like regular hospitals might not accept Medicaid, whereas a you know, a therapy clinic with you know, doctors on board there, they would accept Medicaid. So
you know, here's the thing: when I had my very first heart attack, paramedic came by, got me, took me to the hospital. They radioed in all the symptoms, this and another. And I got to the hospital. Well, I'm not going to slur anybody's race or whatever, but the doctor that treated me, the first thing he asked was about my insurance.
Yeah.
Well, I already told him that I didn't have any personal insurance, and at that time I was not old enough to retire, so I didn't have Medicare. Alright?
Yep.
Anyway, they treated me, they didn't cure me, they treated me and sent me home in less than 24 hours.
Yeah, that's what they do.
3 months later I had another heart attack. They took me to a different hospital, different doctor operated on me. Somewhere down the line, it wasn't the first question he asked, but down the line he asked about insurance, and they said, no, he has no insurance at all. Not Medicaid, Medicare, nothing, not even personal insurance. But the doctor didn't care. All he wanted to do was save a human life.
Yeah, and those would be hospitals and doctors to take note of, to put on a list of doctors that really care.
Well, anyway, the doctor put in a stent. I stayed in the hospital for about 3 days, and everything was fine. They sent me home. Well, guess what? Worked my butt off, because that doctor tried to save my life, and he did.
Yep.
And anyway, I paid Dago. Sure, he got paid.
Yep.
I paid him off.
Well,
okay. Yeah. Now, later on, I had another heart attack. Well, I had Medicare by then, because I was already, it was years later. And, you know, anyway, what I'm trying to say is money plays a big part in human life nowadays.
Yep, that's the whole thing right there. You know, I actually Googled it up, and I'll probably Google it up again, the value of a human life, and it just, it blew me away. I mean,
yeah, I remember you talking about that. That was wild.
It just blew my doors off. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and read this again, but as of 2011, the Environmental Protection Agency set the value of a human life at $9.1 million. Meanwhile, the Food and Drug Administration put it at $7.9 million. Now keep in mind, folks, this is per person. This is you. This is how much they classify that your life is worth. And the Department of Transportation figured was around $6 million. So, this is what just three of all the government agencies out there classify that you're personally worth, your life. This is what your life is worth. There's a monetary value of your life. And it blows my mind that because of insurance and because of people's financial status, poverty or whatever, that these hospitals, you're worth $9.1 million according to the Environmental Protection Agency. So you would think that would be a whole lot more value towards your life than what the actual hospital is going to get for treating you and whatever it is that they got to do. Now, why they put a value on people to begin with, I have no idea, because as far as I'm concerned, the value of human life is priceless. You know, there's not enough money in the world to cause somebody to lose their life. But to lose your life for something like an infection or ridiculousness where, you know, there are treatments available out there, and if we as people could get our act together and compile all this knowledge to where it needs to be, you know, a database that would say, okay, these are all these conditions that happened prior, these are all the things that were tried, these are all the things that succeeded, this is what failed, and these are other options available that have shown promise to make these things, heal these problems, or, you know, solve the problems, or at least use this one and this one together seem to be a good combination to actually resolve any issues. But for some reason, you know, all these medical centers out there, I know that there are hospitals that are for-profit hospitals, there are hospitals that are not-for-profit hospitals, and, you know, there's rules and regulations to everything under the sun. And so, you know, all of that kind of stuff right there kind of keeps a dividing line between information that could very well save somebody's life. There's places you can go in Mexico for certain types of treatments that you can't get in the United States. There's places you can go in Canada to get other medicines that you can't get here in the United States. There's places in Canada that you can't get stuff that you can get here in the United States, and vice versa. So, to me, there should be some sort of universal pipeline of information and resources available to anybody who needs it. So, if I got something that I really have to have addressed, but it's for some reason being held up by red tape here in the United States for whatever purpose, and I have that solution available to me, I can be shipped down to Mexico or Canada, have that resolved, and be, you know, sent back whenever I'm healed. Doggone it, folks, you know, I call it mad science for a reason. It ain't because I'm trying to be a jerk and tell everybody that I know more than they know. I'm just saying, when you're looking at things that are problems, so-called problems in the world, and basic science shows that there's a way to fix it, and you can't get the hierarchy of the world or even the average Joe to, you know, look into it or get up and do something about it or come together and, you know, work on a problem, it's frustrating. And that's why I call it mad science. It makes me mad. You know, science is science. It either works or it don't. But mad science is the fact that you got real science that you can't even use because somebody says, this particular strain of plant, well, it's illegal because it looks too much like this illegal plant. It's a cousin of. you know? And this is why you see so many people in this world suffering. This is why that you have a society where people are obese and diabetic and sick and all these conditions, because the education system here in the United States has quite literally collapsed. It's failed. I mean, there are other countries out there where you have brilliant young men and women that study and they learn a lot and they become doctors and, you know, lawyers and, you know, all kinds of, you know, high positions. And their education system works better. What are they doing differently? You know? And if you're going to teach science, teach real science. Teach science where, you know, these people have hands-on. They get to see how it works. Science is supposed to be about observation. It's supposed to be about being able to repeat a process, testing, and, you know, observing and coming up with theories and then turn the theories into a, you know, fact and actual work in science. It's not supposed to be what it is today. You know, everything is theoretical anymore. Everything is basically dragging its foot. It's like you got the solution on the way to the table, but for some reason somebody wants to keep putting chains on that deal as it's being dragged towards the table. Now, in a conspiratorial mind, you wouldn't want to cure the common cold if you're trying to sell cold medicine. So you would put up every roadblock under the sun, including the Food and Drug Administration. If it doesn't pass the Food and Drug Administration, it never makes it to the market, and people don't know about it. And even though you pick up a box of cold medicine, and it got a long list of possible side effects on there, and some of the side effects are worse than the actual cold itself, you're better off just letting nature take care of the cold, or looking in some home natural remedies, bees, honey, or whatever, to, you know, treat that. But once again, they're not teaching that in the public education system, all the possible alternatives, you know. And when it comes down the pipeline of the science and the mainstream, you know, Food and Drug and you know, EPA and all that kind of stuff, when it makes it through that entire system and finally gets out there, then it's allowed. But until it actually makes it through that entire system, it's off the table. You can't put something out there as a product and call it a healing thing. Otherwise, they'll send the jackbooted thugs to kick your door in and raid your business or your home. And so all that red tape, all the time while that red tape is in place, there are people out there needlessly suffering when there's a possibility for a solution. I mean, if the doctor's already said you're going to die, there ain't nothing you can do about it. You go home and prepare to die. You maybe have 6 months to whatever to live. And those who didn't listen to that doctor and said, well, I'm not ready to die, so I'm going to look into alternative methods, even if they are illegal, I'm going to try it. You know, for pain relief or even healing or whatever, you know, those that didn't listen to them, they got all kinds of testimonials out there of how they went and tried this particular deal and it worked for them. Maybe it won't work for you, but if you hadn't tried it, if it's a possibility and you just overlook it because the doctor hasn't said it was, if you heard this from the doctor, if your doctor said, go out and try hemp seed oil, you would go home and try hemp seed oil. Because the doctor's like God to you. He's got the information. He's got all the answers. And doctors know best. Well, people are trusting doctors these days with their very lives. They're trusting their doctors all the way to the grave. And that's why mad science is mad science. I got to get out here and I got to yell about this stuff because it don't make any sense.
Hey, I got a question. You know, all your soda pops that are carbonated, that is so simple to carbonate water. It's unbelievable. In fact, my brother, quite a few years back, bought a system where you took a 2-liter bottle and they had a special cap that you put on it, and he would mix his drink syrup with water, this bottle, leaving about two-thirds full, and then he would put the carbon dioxide gas on it under pressure, shake the bottle, let it sit for a few minutes, and then release the pressure a little bit, and he had a carbonated drink.
Yeah.
Question is, could you do that with oxygen?
Well, I'm sure you can, and that's another thing that I was also contemplating on was they're using a hydrogel, which hydro in itself tells you that there are water molecules in there, so that means it has oxygen and hydrogen involved in it. And so what I was talking about was, why couldn't you take that same hydrogel and impregnate it with high concentrations of oxygen, so that whenever you had that wound and the bandage over that, you would have a little some sort of compression to that, which would, as that gel starts to finally go through the process of dehydrating and stuff like that from natural evaporation, that it would also be releasing fresh oxygen into that wound continuously.
All right, the thing is, my question about oxygenating the water under pressure so it comes out like carbonated drinks, but instead of carbon dioxide, it would be oxygen. I'm holding in my hand a chemical I bought a few months back, and you're supposed to take 15 drops of this in any kind of liquid. It can be fruit juice, water, cup, tea, whatever. But anyway, it's called NUTRI, Nutri, and then it has the oxygen symbol on it, too. In other words, it's oxygen. But it says cellular oxygen enhancement. What it does, this chemical, it helps your body extract the oxygen from food and drinks that you eat and drink. And I'm just wondering if this chemical, along with oxygenated water, would help quite a bit.
Well, I was thinking the same thing.
Sent this to you, a bottle of it. I bought like a dozen bottles.
It wouldn't hurt to look at it. I was also thinking the same thing because, there are people who have oxygen tanks that they have for medical reasons, but there are also oxygen generators out there as well on the market.
Right.
Where basically it pulls oxygen out of the air. And I was thinking of a diffuser like in the fish tank, which would, take and cause that to bubble out into the water. So maybe a combination of the whirlpool plus an oxygen diffuser putting more oxygen into that water could actually help as well.
Okay, so that's your external, but that would, I've thought about that myself. Now, you said attack it from both sides, internal and external. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to send you a little bottle of this, and what you do is take like a Gatorade bottle, but a large one because it's got a large lid, a half-inch hole in it, and then take that, the deal where you fill your tires up, the valve.
Yeah.
All right, you take the drill a half-inch hole in the lid, you put insert that. That way you can put the oxygen in the water under pressure.
Yeah.
And it'll take about 5 or 10 PSI, which that little bottle will hold that. And you shake it up, you oxygenate the water, then you put this in it and drink that. That way you get the oxygen in your system, and that way you're attacking it from both external and internal.
Yeah.
What do you think? It won't kill you.
Well, like I said here earlier, when it comes down to alternative methods, when everything conventional, what the doctor said is off the table because it ain't working, you try everything.
All right, as long as you don't overdo it, the maximum side effect would be a little lightheadedness from a little bit too much oxygen, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
I mean, you just get real relaxed and lightheaded. That would be if you did it too much, the maximum side effect.
Well, for me personally, with the Mad Science and my YouTube channel and all that deal, I got to finally build me a place to work because I need a lab. My lab's pretty much destroyed and out of commission at the moment, and I've got a little bitty pockets of places where I work. And so, but I don't want people in this world to rely on waiting on anybody, including me, for answers to stuff. So I got to put all this information on the table so that somebody out there, My plea to the world is, somebody out there, take everything that you think is plausible that I'm talking about and run with it. Do something with it. Don't waste this information. That's the reason why Mad Science Platform exists to begin with, is an idea factory. You know, you come here, you sit and listen into the show, and we talk about subjects that you may or may not be interested in, but if you hear anything on here, if you see anything on any of the videos that resonates with you, share it with somebody. Because the whole key is, this information is just information. It's like a book never read. If you ain't listening to it and you ain't acting upon it, then I'm wasting my time. And I'm going to continue to do this, because as long as I put it in podcast form and put it on the internet, maybe somebody down the line will hear what I said, and maybe it will be helpful to them. And everything that everybody has said on, you know, that come here as guest and co-host and stuff like that, and even the comments like Stephen Gibbons posts in the chat room all the time. You can actually go into these chat rooms and you can scroll up to the top, and there is a little link that says that you can go to the previous 25 or previous 35 deals. You can scroll back through the entire history of this chat, and you can find video links that we have posted on here. That's the reason why I like this Chat Tango chat, because you got a collection and a document of all the things and links that we have compiled since we started doing this show. And so, you know, the information that we're posting out here via podcast, via the chat room, you know, the Skypes or, YouTube channels that we share with you and stuff like that, those are resources with information available. And if you have some problem out there, whatever problem it is, type your problem down in the chat room or throw a Skype message out there. And we got enough people out here who can research into all the alternatives, put every possibility on the table, because when your life is at stake, or your health, or anything for that matter, you need to know everything that is a potential possibility to resolve your problem. You know, when I first started into radio, the key word was seeking solutions. You know, it was TNS Radio. You know, there were some good people on that show back in the day, and their motto was seeking solutions. Well, I believed in it then, and I believe in it now. But now that we've found an astronomical amount of solutions, now that they're on the table, and all we're asking for now is for people to absorb that knowledge, to use it, to take it. Take it and run with it.
Your monitor?
Huh?
Are you looking at your monitor?
Yeah. Yeah, I see it.
Okay. I'm going to send you a bottle of that.
Cool. Thank you very much.
Okay. Yeah. And I might make a short video showing you exactly how I'm going to go about fixing it to where you can oxygenate the water, like I'm telling you about.
Yeah.
So simple, it's pathetic. I mean, really, pathetic. It's that simple. You can oxygenate the water. Instead of carbon dioxide, you oxygenate your soft drinks. Duh. Why are they using carbon dioxide if you can use oxygen?
I don't know, but see,
this chemical actually is on the cellular level. It helps your body actually extract the oxygen from what you breathe, yeah, and what you ingest in your food. And your liquids.
Well, and that's another plus, because if you can tack an infection and promote healing and all that from all different directions, inside and out, the more ways that you can combat whatever problem you got going on, the better.
Okay, I'm going to turn my camera on one more time, because there's other people that can see. Not everybody can see, but I know there's some people out there that can. I'm going to hold it up for about 10 seconds, okay? So people can see what I'm showing you.
So, basically, folks, there's a lot of information available to us. And the way to get that out there is the way that we've been doing it now, I mean, but it's the people that are sharing links. It's the people that are sharing information and pushing it out as far as we can to everybody in this world that needs to have that information. I wish that there was a way that we could do what Google did, and we the people put together, compile a list of everything under the sun, you know, tested science, tested treatments for everything under the sun, and compile it into an easy enough deal where somebody get on there, they can type in, hey, I got this issue going on, and a whole list of everything that possible ways that you can resolve this. And then they can go down the checklist, what they've tried, and keep on trying until they finally succeed. You know, the thing about it is, and this isn't just the average Joe. I've witnessed this with actual doctors themselves. Doctors know chemistry, they know medical, they know, you know, the basics and all that kind of stuff. But when you take a brain like mine, which is a mechanical brain, and you try to put in a new idea outside of what they have been accustomed to, they have a really hard time understanding what it is that you're saying, because you don't have the terminology in order to explain it to where their education will allow them to understand that type of language. It's like me talking, you know, Chinese or whatever. I can speak English, and some Chinese can understand English, but I can't understand Chinese well enough to be able to communicate with them and try to tell them, you know, here's an idea, here's how you can fix this problem that you got, and so I can't get that through to them. But maybe you can speak a really good Chinese, or, you know, all the different versions of, you know, you got different types of Chinese language, like Mandarin is one of them. But if you can relay that information, if I can tell it to you and you can understand it and tell it to them, then they get the help that they needed. In the science community, there are people out there who may be really good scientists in their field, but they only good to an extent of what they've been educated to. When it comes down to trying to communicate mad science to mainstream science, they don't want to hear it. They don't understand it, and even if they do to some extent, they will find a flaw in the system of what you're trying to tell them before any testing is ever even done. They're already telling you, well, it won't work because this. And it's aggravating. It's aggravating. It's maddening is what it is. It's you know, there's got to come a time when the human brain, you know, has got to wake up to common sense. Until we get to that table, we're gonna see this craziness going on. We're living in the year 2018, for Pete's sake. Year 2018, with all the kind of high-tech technology we've got. I was looking at a device that this vascular surgeon had, and it's simply a portable high-tech speaker system where she can put this probe on your foot, and she can listen to your heartbeat. She can listen to your pulse and see that you're actually getting blood flow to a certain area. And I'm like, man, that's some really cool technology. I got to get me one of those. They're about $500, you know. It's like whoever's got the best toolbox can do the, you know, the most type of work or whatever. Love to have all those cool tools. But until people got an understanding of what the tool's even for, you know, you're at the mercy of the doctor. You're at the mercy of your governments. You're at the mercy of whoever has knowledge that you don't. We should be combining our brains together, not literally, but, you know, mentally, combining our brains together to make my strengths help Raymond, and his strengths help me, and we can troubleshoot ideas and come up with all kinds of solutions to problems. That's what we need, is a think tank for the world. We need a website, you know, think tank. ShazizRadio.com is kind of like that. When you get people here, we troubleshoot stuff. But I'd like to see some sort of popular website where people can come there and not post a whole bunch of, you know, it's like they got these bulletin boards out there. You go search up Google and you might find a conversation on a bulletin board about certain subjects. But if you have a database that can, you know, guide you and direct you to whatever problem that you talk about, if you type in, you know, I got a toothache, a whole list of all these different people that have put in these alternative methods for remedy in it, the way the doctors do it, and all that kind of stuff, all this compiled information regarding that toothache, so that you look at this deal and you say, well, I've already tried that and it didn't work, but there's some that I haven't tried, and this one here, because of the research that's been done on it. You don't have to rely on whether or not a doctor knows about a particular therapy or not. You can bring it to that doctor's attention and say, look, this is what they say this will do. Is this an option for me? And the doctor can tell you, well, this is a possible problem because, or whatever. But at least putting the ideas and the options in front of the ones that people have so much faith in that they will follow that doctor all the way to the doggone grave. And it drives me insane. Because the doctor may be smart, he may be a good-hearted, wonderful person, but if they are not aware of a hyperbaric chamber that is in their own facility, and they're not aware of what that hyperbaric chamber could do for that particular patient, if I was a doctor, I would want to know every resource available in my facility. All the way down to how many band-aids do we got? How many people can we help out? And how long would it take us if we had a shortage of band-aids to get new band-aids in? I would want to know that hospital inside and out. I wouldn't care what kind of doctor I was. I would want to know what that entire building had to offer so that I knew what I had to work with. It's just no different than your toolbox that you have in your garage to work on your vehicles or any other thing that you got. You know what size wrenches you got. You know what types of screwdrivers and Allen wrenches and Torx head bits or all that kind of stuff. You know what's in your toolbox, and so you, by having all that knowledge of what you actually have, know your limitations of what you can repair and what you can't repair. And then you also have compiled a list of other people who have other tools that you don't, that they may be willing to either rent or loan you so that you can do yet even more work. And if you can't get somebody to borrow a tool from or rent from, there are places that you have compiled a list where you know where you can go buy this tool and get it soon enough where you can get the job done in a timely manner. So that's how it works. You compile all of your assets, all of your resources, and you know where your limitations are to what you can do to help yourself and others. Now, if other people had that mindset, including doctors and lawyers and anybody who's in any kind of professional business whatsoever, to maximize their efficiency as far as knowing where you can get access to what, and there are a lot of people out there who do have that mindset. If they can't help you, they know somebody who can help you. And if they can't find it, they know somebody who can help you find it, or they'll find it themselves and get that information to you in order to help you. That's what a good business person does. That's what a good doctor does. That's what the average Joe needs to do. There's a lot of people who work in a lot of different careers. You may be one of those people. You may be in the medical industry. You may know where the medical industry's weaknesses are. And by bringing that weakness to the table, you can have somebody else who knows how to fix that weakness, make that medical facility better. Somebody who can come into your business and troubleshoot all the problems. Why are you spending $3,000 a month for electricity when you could actually do it for lesser by repairing this and making this more efficient? Those kind of people are out there in the world. Those kind of people are people that could come in and help you to make more money by making you more efficient and even making it more comfortable for your employees to work for you. If your employee's comfortable, if he's happy with his job, if you make it as easy as possible and as efficient as possible to where he is that doesn't have to work near as hard, then you're going to have a thriving business. You're going to have people who want to stay with your company. So even out there in the corporations, I hope that there's some corporate person out there listening to me. Because I guarantee you there are unhappy people working for you. And a guy like me could come in there and see what kind of world you got going on and why it is that they're comfortable by asking them human questions, by looking at mechanical issues and finding these problems, why these problems are actually occurring. And I could give you a solution that if you implement that solution, you'll solve that problem for that person, that they'll be happy to work with you. That's how this thing could really take off. That's how all these networks that we've put together could benefit by putting our minds and our talents and resources together and troubleshooting, and then having those people that are willing to, you know, do the hard work. See, I got tons and tons of ideas, but until I can get somebody who actually is good at manufacturing, and somebody who's good at math, and somebody who's good at electronics or whatever, that way I can bring their talents and my talents all together, then we don't have the dream team. We just have this loudmouth, crazy-haired, mad science guy with a bunch of ideas. Until they're actually put into what people say, you know, oh, we'll build it and show them what it's like. Well, yeah, I would, really, seriously, I would really like to do that. The problem is, I've got a lot of designs that have specific needs that I personally haven't the resources in order to be able to do that. I still haven't, to this day, got a sealed plasma reactor. It's a simple concept that could be easily proven, had all the aspects of what this reactor has to be able to do and be sealed in order to do it and be able to maintain a specific vacuum. And what this thing would do would be super efficient, instead of having to use a heavy duty resistive element in order to run a hot water heater. You could actually use the heat and the energy of plasma in order to do the same job for a fraction of the input voltage and more efficiency. With that redneck hot tub that I showed, where I took a coffee pot element and I actually was able to heat a hot tub that had absolutely no insulation underneath it, was open to the open air, and you could heat that thing up so hot that it took 4 hours to get it up to operating temperature, but after that, if you didn't shut it off after a while, it would get so hot that you couldn't sit in it in the dead of winter. I mean, that was when snow and ice is on the ground. It would get so hot that you could not sit in it. And that tells me the efficiency is incredible, because once you got it up to operating temperature, it barely needed any energy in order to contain it, to keep that maintained. So the same thing would apply with all these other things that I talk about, like the plasma reactor, heating water and using the light source off of that and using the radiant energy source off of it. You could do a multiple things with one simple unit. And so I bring these to the table, and I hope that somebody will take that idea and just run with it. I mean, I don't care whether or not you're taking intellectual project, ideas or whatever, and claiming it for yourself. Take the credit for it. I don't care. I don't want the credit. All right? Just make it happen. If I come across the design and I put it out there and I'm saying this to you and I'm showing you a video and I'm saying, try this out, I don't care if you take that idea and you run out there and you steal it and you patent it and you get all the credit and all the money and all the glory of doing that, I couldn't care less. Well, I will get my payment is by knowing that is now out there to the public. It does work exactly like I say. I'm vindicated, it does what I said it was going to do, and now people have the option to benefit from it. These designs and ideas, you know, the power companies out there, they got you over a barrel because, you know, it's so easy just to walk over there and flip the switch on. You can do that, you know. And all you got to do is go to work and make some money, take a portion of your money, pay the power company every month, and maybe a little more during the cold seasons or even a little more during the hot seasons, vice versa. Doesn't matter. Nonetheless, you still have to maintain that job so that you can have those funds so that you can give to the power company, because the day that you lose your job and you no longer have those funds, the walking over to the light switch is over. You don't get to do that anymore. They punish you. They'll shut your power off, and then you won't have that luxury any longer. Now, if you know about alternative energy, such as ideas that we've been talking about, you can find resolutions to, even to the extent of taking what would be a 2,500 watt generator and being able to use that 2,500 watt generator, knowing things about battery storage and capacitor technology and changing that that what voltage that thing's capable of doing into a different type of energy for heating or cooling or anything like that. You could get a 2,500 watt generator to quite literally run your average household, just not like it is set up right now. Because what's going on right now is your home is an energy hog, flat out, plain and simple. It's an energy hog. There are things that you could do in your house to decrease your energy bill just by unplugging stuff. But there are ways by which you could modify existing appliances to not require the amount of energy that they require now with all the resistive loads that it takes. And even in induction technology, you know, running motors, electric motors, they're inefficient. They're using more power than is actually needed. Otherwise, they wouldn't be getting hot. See, when when you're pushing more energy to anything, you got what's called eddy currents that'll build up in there. Eddy currents are like whirlpools at the bottom of the base of a waterfall. When the water is come pounding down off the Niagara Falls, you got this big massive bubbles and whirlpools surrounding that because you got all this energy coming down with no place to go, and it's kind of trying to be consolidated in. So you got energy that's exploding out of that area right down there, and it becomes really dangerous to even be anywhere near it because you get sucked right into the doggone thing. Now, if you had a wide enough opening for that water to dump out, it'd roll out nice and smooth and wouldn't be a problem at all. But right there in that spot where all that power is hitting, you produce currents that are causing heat. You know, even spinning that water around, the base of that waterfall is going to be warmer than it would be out there in the mainstream down there where it's had an opportunity to disperse that temperature into the atmosphere or even the surrounding rocks or whatever. So when you got a transformer and you're putting too much energy to it, that energy is trying to get out of that transformer. You got what's called leakage. So some of that flux is actually making it outside to the atmosphere, and what isn't making it outside, that's kind of, you know, gathering around, that can't get, you know, it's not being used through the coil system, is producing little currents inside the metal, which is causing that metal to get hot, and so that transformer gets hot. When the transformer finally reaches a temperature that it begins to affect the actual windings on the copper windings on the transformer itself, then the copper begins to reach its temperature. The thermal process of what the thermal breakdown is of the actual insulation that goes around that copper begins to fail, because once that copper tubing and the transformer itself get hot and that insulation begins to break down from the thermal process, it will fail because it will no longer be able to resist the flow of electricity from one winding to the next, and it'll be basically a dead short. Instead of 1,000 turns on your transformer, you're down to one turn, essentially a dead short, and your transformer is no longer working. It's burned up. So, understanding what cause you can and the effect, and you can know the solution by understanding what's going on there. When you got those currents flowing and you got that heat being generated, and you decide, how can I resolve this? Well, one of the ways you can resolve it is put less energy to it at a different frequency range than you're doing now, and so that you're getting the current flow that you need, but you're not overwhelming this transformer that can't, it's basically resistance. And then the other option is to be able to take some of that heat away from that transformer. Build a cooling system, like a radiator, into the actual transformer itself that will take that energy that's being wasted via heat and utilize it for something else. So you could run your transformer and want it to get hot enough that it doesn't reach the thermal breakdown of the insulation of the wire, but hot enough that it will take whatever liquid you circulate through that transformer core and heat it up and transfer that energy to some other place where you need it. Like, for example, you take a stack of Peltier elements and you got a transformer. You don't want to put it directly on the transformer. You want to put it down line a little bit and use that that warm water that's running underneath that transformer out into the cores to make a temperature difference between the back of the Peltier element to the atmosphere of the room and generate electricity with it. So there's all kinds of possibilities. It just, an idea is only as good as how far you're willing to take it. It's as simple as that. We have every piece of the puzzle necessary to build the most efficient machines in the history of time. We got every piece of the puzzle in order to resolve every single problem that is dealing with all kinds of health needs. We got every single piece of the puzzle on how to take water that had been polluted or, you know, whatever, and bring it back to its natural state to where it now has the life-giving and healing benefits. So we can filter the water. We can treat it, you know, without chemicals. We can use basic science to quite literally clean up anything, any messes that we made in that water, and make it good for human consumption once again. You know, instead of putting chlorine to the water, which is not natural, instead of putting fluoride in the water, which is not natural, both of which have shown bad side effects that you don't want, and we put the water natural, such as the well out there on my father-in-law's farm. That is a natural well, naturally spring-fed. It has all the vitamins and minerals that natural water has. The best water in the world is sitting out there on his property. And somewhere in this world, there's another farmer that's got another one. The best water out there. And if there's water that might be, you know, what they call sulfated or whatever, that, you know, has a stinky odor to it and that kind of stuff like that, whenever you run it through your hot water heater, and if you understand what's going on in that water, you got little microbes that are eating the material inside that deal that is the basically the sacrificial material that it will eat up instead of actually destroying your water heater. And if you understand about calcium buildup, you can actually treat that water heater and it will last indefinitely. So, all these options are available, all the science is available. Now it's time for everybody out there to network together and build some sort of community brain. You know, there ain't no reason why everybody out there has to do without. There's no reason whatsoever. There's no reason why just because you get old, you got to die of an infection. You know, nature's going to take its course when it does. But if you have an option to understand how chemistry is working, understand how science, this hyperbaric chamber and oxygen therapy, that's something that 99% of an average Joe probably haven't got a clue when you say what I just said, the hyperbaric oxygen therapy. They don't know what it is. whether the Food and Drug Administration or whatever, any of the agencies that regulate any medical industries, whether or not they're holding back this kind of technology, or whether they're just now allowing it, or they're just now getting in the mainstream. This video here, I guess, one of them anyway, was made back in 2014. That's 4 years ago, I guess. So, there's where my frustration lies.
You know, I like what you just said. It was 4 years ago.
Yep.
At the rate technology is advancing, what in the heck are they doing with it now?
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
It's aggravating because this video was 4 years ago, and I'm just finding out about it today. You know, my brain can't hold all this information, but had I had a physician that I could talk to, I could say, hey, you know, this is what we got going on, and they would have say, look, I can't remember all these personally, but here's a list that we have compiled that has every possible solution, whether it be the standard medicine, you know, conventional medicine, or alternative medicines, or even things that are theoretical but could potentially work. Here is a list of everything that we've compiled for this particular disease, ailment, or injury.
Right.
Now I would have all those options available to me. But you realize how many people die because somebody didn't know about a specific type of medicine available?
Right. That's my point. I mean, just because the doctor doesn't know doesn't mean that he doesn't want to cure you. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I mean, there's so much information out there. No one person knows everything.
That's why I say that these networks like we got going on here need to expand and, you know, have some sort of place to focus knowledge into, you know, really simple, easy to find categories. I type in, you know, I got a toothache and I got 1,000 different deals right here, and I can look down that list and see everything that I've tried. And then some, all the way down to alternative medicines that people have known about for thousands of generations or whatever. You know, they know this is what they did back in the day before the dentist showed up and started, you know, killing everybody with fluoride.
Right.
So,
you know, the thing is, I mean, I read somewhere here about 2 years ago, and that was 2 years ago now, think about this a minute, that the technology that had advanced in 30 days, just the advancements in technology in 30 days, it would take the average human being 5 lifetimes to learn it.
Yeah.
Just 30 days. But that was 2 years ago. So what is technology doing today? I mean, it's capable that one medical person, doctor, nurse, or whatever, could possibly know everything.
Back in the old days, we were at the mercies of books, and we had to be able to go to the library in order to be able to find a book for, you know, diabetic medicines or diabetic diets and anything that you look at, anything you try to find information on. But now, we have little bitty cool-looking flash drives that'll hold 64 gigabyte of information, and then some that you could actually compile so much information on that, and when you go to your doctor and you say, well, I got this problem and I'm trying to do research on it, they could go down the list and they could actually put you out one of these, say, take it home, plug it in your computer, look and see which one that you think would be interested in trying these therapies, and then we'll work with you with our conventional methods to try to make this, you know, help you out.
Exactly. You know, that's what I was bringing up about the oxygen therapy. I mean, you know, the guy says 100% oxygen. Well, duh, they know that 100% oxygen will burn your lungs out.
Well, he's talking the difference of how much actually makes it into your bloodstream.
What you're capable of handling. I mean, you know,
Yes,
I agree with you.
So, hi, Barbara, how you doing?
Whoops, I was muted. Well, hi, Shaziz and Ray. I was out this morning early and just popped back in, figured what's going on in the world. And you just brought me right on here, which is good. Well, I'm kind of like, I see you wrote you needed a miracle, and so that's where you probably started talking. So I'm not really, I don't know where you've been or what you're really discussing, and I've been talking to myself a lot this morning.
I'm the only person that can understand you, right?
That's right, and you know what happens when you start doing that, right?
What's that?
People think you're crazy.
Well, nobody's saying you're wrong.
There you go.
Yeah. So you just keep going, you know, and you just keep, well, I'm just saying. So I was looking at this thing, one of the things, you know, certainly I think we need a miracle, that's for sure. But you were talking about oxygen therapy?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
fascinating to me. I'm not too up on that, but I've heard of it. Now, I have had a friend a long while back that had lymphoma, and she went through the whole chemo thing, right? Chemo, radiation, and
yep.
Well, that nearly killed her, but she did survive it. But 4 years after, which often happens with this particular lymphoma, it came back, and she made the decision to go completely alternative. And she went into this, did some of that oxygen therapy. I wish I had known the whole, process that she went through, but of course she went the route of all juicing, natural foods, organic foods, supplements, and this therapy with this doctor who you couldn't even get an appointment with. He was so busy because he had such amazing successes with his injections of oxygen. Is that what
let me explain it to you, and I'm going to throw a link in there for I just put the word in there. Hyperbaric oxygen therapy, what it is that you basically go in there and they pressurize the chamber, like the home units will be pressurized to 5 PSI. And so basically you raise the atmospheric pressure up and you compact a high concentrate of oxygen into the system, which then in turn transfers into places in your bloodstream where it gets right into soft tissues that it needs in order to promote healing. It also has benefits by there's certain types of bacteria that cause you to get pustules in your body that it will kill off those bacteria, and basically it has an antibiotic effect to it. Now this, on top of regular conventional antibiotics, will actually complement each other. And so what your friend was doing was brilliant, because with the juicing and you're getting all those antioxidants and all the different types of nutrients into your body that your body actually needs for healing to begin with, and then adding on top of that, putting more oxygen into the lungs and into the bloodstream down into capillaries and stuff like that, or veins, and mixing with your blood and plasma to get down to affected areas. There are all kinds of people out there who have testimonies of different deals that they had that oxygen, hyperbaric oxygen therapy had helped them out. Like the one guy that was in the podcast that I played at the beginning, he said that they wanted to cut off his foot. This therapy not only saved his foot, but it saved his life.
Well, yeah, I mean, so it did save her life, actually. She was free of cancer through all the alternatives, and there's so many testimonies, like you say. You know, there's so many people. I don't know if you recall that incident. I think it was a Mormon family or an Amish family. I can't quite remember, that their daughter was diagnosed with a brain tumor, and once you go to a doctor and you once you go to the doctor, of course, and they discover something like this, you are caught now in the system.
Yeah.
So they have all your information, they have you, they know you, they have all things that identify you, and they start you on their program. Immediately, she was taken into this process, this chemotherapy, and so on and so forth, and her parents basically saw over a period of time that that was killing their daughter. I think she was about 14. And so they wanted to take their daughter to some alternative therapies that they were exploring and figured this sounded much better and more possible for their daughter. And, of course, the system refused. And then they basically denied the parents any rights to their own daughter and to stay away from their daughter. And the... I guess the Child Protective Services got involved. And so now the parents, what they did was they actually kidnapped their own daughter, took her, I think it was to some clinic in Mexico or Germany, I don't know, because there's two places, several places actually, Germany and Mexico, that are known for alternative therapies. And now they're wanted, now they're on the wanted list for kidnapping their own daughter. And so months went by, and they returned to the States, and their daughter's completely free of cancer of the brain. And now it's the conundrum about what do they do now? What does the system do now?
You know, Barbara, you mentioned Mexico and Germany. I don't know about Germany, but I do know that there is a medical laboratory just north of Mexico City that has been doing research on using baking soda and other, it's more than just using baking soda, okay? They use baking soda and other things, and so far, they started back in the early 1990s, and so far, they have had a 96% cure, not treatment, cure rate for cancer.
Really? Yeah.
That's probably where they went with Mexico. I'm not saying that it is, but most likely because it's a lot cheaper to go to Mexico than it is to go to Germany.
Well, the thing is, my father-in-law is at a stage right now where he's been through three surgeries, and the option that he has right now, surgery is no longer an option because the graft that they put in there is already infected, and so now they got to be able to try to stop that infection in order to save his life. So the doctor said their option on that now would be amputation. Of course, my father-in-law obviously doesn't want his leg amputated, so that's off the table as well. So the last option available according to conventional methods is to get the they took a culture of the wound, and they're running tests to grow in the lab to see what bacteria they're actually dealing with, so they know which antibiotic, whether it could be a strong pill form and he'd be able to go home, or whether it be something where they have to put a PICC line in, which essentially that's so that you don't have to keep poking holes for fresh IVs when you're moving from one place to the next. Either way, they're waiting for answers back from the culture to find out which bacteria that they're dealing with so that they can treat this properly with the right deal, and but that's not going to address the healing of that wound. And so up until yesterday when I started talking to the doggone vascular surgeon, because I asked her, I said, have you ever heard of hyperbaric oxygen therapy? And she said, yeah, and I talked to her about it, and you know, she said, we actually have one of those chambers in this facility. And I'm like, well, why are they using that? Because it says that it has the potential. It not only produces an effect that causes stem cells to get down to the area to actually fix it, but it gets down into the bone as well. And it gets into the, you know, all parts of the, you know, bloodstream and the soft tissues necessary. It gets oxygen to where it's needed in order to do the job. And then it actually helps to promote more red blood cells and strengthen the immune system by, you know, oxygenating the body. That's, you know, that's our life force. We drink water because it has oxygen in it and hydrogen.
Right.
And We breathe in.
Well, it's also of the frequency. You look at these, what we're talking about are frequencies, let's say nature's frequencies, right? Water is one of nature's frequencies, we could say. And originally, it's the creation of everything. I like to say that in the beginning, creation was all in harmony and balance, where the frequencies of everything were like that. And now things have been corrupted, of course, and we do know that we can reinstate the original frequency through certain words and in the Indian way, certain ceremonies, with, of course, chanting and certain elements, one being the women's medicine of birch. So we know that this is factual. So I'm thinking of the frequency of the water, the frequency of natural things, and then you think of the frequency of chemotherapy, right?
Yeah, that's
good.
If you just look at... or radiation, right?
Well,
like you see.
I was saying earlier, when you mentioned water, natural water, he lives on a 360-acre farm, and he has a natural well that actually is their water source. And that, to me, is the best water to treat that wound with, because
yeah.
it has all the natural minerals and everything that natural water is supposed to have. It's not city water that is chlorinated or fluoride-filled or
yeah.
whatever.
Which is, a negative frequency, or a disruptive frequency, chlorine, fluoride. You look at these things because nature is functioning with its natural frequencies until, of course, it's intruded upon and corrupted.
Yeah.
But our bodies, like you say, we are made of 70-some percent of water. You know, so whatever we ingest, of course, is going to affect the frequency within us, right?
Yes.
And whatever we're subjected to, whether it's electromagnetic waves, whether it's your microwave, whether it's your cell phone, all these frequencies coming from these technologies are disruptive to the balanced frequencies, or nature's frequencies, is what I'm saying.
Well, when they do chemotherapy, they're not attacking just the bad cells, they're attacking the good cells, and they're breaking your immune system down, which is what you're needed to actually, you know, fight off infections and stuff. So,
you know,
there's a
well, it doesn't.
With collateral damage.
Yeah, exactly. That's the collateral damage.
You have 5 trillion living, healthy cells in your body.
You
have a billion bad cells, so. If you kill the million bad cells, but you kill 2 million good cells, it's called collateral damage.
So what your friend did with the hyperbaric oxygen therapy and with the natural juicings of that food, that she did what I would believe would be the perfect thing for cancer, because
yeah.
if you put. You know, what nature's already put out there for cancer, and then you're actually putting more oxygen. I mentioned earlier that there was, according to science, there was a time when the pressure of the earth was actually a lot higher than it is now, and it was more oxygen rich, and there were larger animals and larger plants and trees and stuff like that. We kind of actually touched on that when we talked about how they said that that one
Devil's Tower was a tree.
If that were a tree, and they did all the calculations to it, they said that tree would have been 6 miles tall.
Right.
That's big. So that would tell you that the oxygen content in the atmosphere at that given time would have been incredible. I mean, I would be surprised that people didn't run around like Superman back then, because you felt good.
Well, they were giants.
Yeah.
So maybe that's what it was, you know.
But that chemical I was showing you earlier.
Yeah.
I smoke and have for many, many years, so my lungs are damaged. They cannot absorb as much oxygen. My wife has never smoked. She was born and raised out in the desert in Mexico, and her lungs are just as clean as, I mean, they're pristine. She takes 15 drops of this chemical, puts it in a glass of water, drinks that water, and 15, 20 minutes after she drinks that water, she says that her whole body, it doesn't vibrate, it's kind of like real soft thumbs with energy.
Yeah.
Now, what is that that she's putting in to drink?
It's called nutrient oxygen.
Okay.
And you put 15 drops in a glass of any kind of liquid. It could be juice, water, coffee, tea, whatever. 15 drops 3 times a day. She does it once a day.
Right.
He feels like $1 million.
Well, where can you get some of that stuff?
I don't remember right now, but I can find it, and when I do, I'll let you know. But I'm going to send you a bottle of it just to try with your father-in-law.
All right, and if you can, type in this chat conversation down here on Skype the name of that so that we can Google up and see where maybe we can find it.
So there are companies now that are making these frequency systems that you can buy for your home that will activate the natural harmonious frequency of the water that comes into your house.
Wow.
And it's really, I don't know the name of the company. I could possibly ask my daughter because she's always investigating this kind of stuff, and it's pretty amazing. And they have done test after test after test showing how once again you take corrupted water or polluted water and you hook it up to this frequency system, and it activates it and harmonizes and purifies the water to its original frequency.
Well, not to mention, according to what I've read about the hyperbaric chambers, if that water was extremely oxygenated, there are certain bacteria and viruses that can't live in that type of environment. And so you could kill off, you know, things that shouldn't be in the water, you know, like they have water filtrations out there that will go down, they got by a micron scale, the really tiniest, smallest molecule, and even biological that could be inside there, things like cryptosporidium and stuff. They say that these particular water filters will take the scuzziest water and make it so you can actually drink it. That's amazing technology. That, with all the science that we have available to us right now, with all these new technologies and things that actually exist, I can't believe that anybody in this world is actually having to suffer.
Now, do you know about the Rife machine?
Yeah, I've talked about it many times.
Oh, yeah, so, and I know too, but I mean, I'm just looking at this again because this was developed in the 1920s, right?
Yeah.
He was an American scientist, and it's a Rife frequency generator. And, you know, this is supposedly, you know, the electromagnetic frequency, again, that finding the frequency and producing an impulse of the same frequency will kill or disable diseased cells.
Yeah, and they called that back in the day, like in anywhere from the 30s to all the way up to modern day, they were calling that quackery science, and so...
That's right.
What they didn't understand was, and because now people are actually revisiting it, they have places, I think, down in Mexico, they have facilities down there that utilize the Rife machines now.
Yeah. Yeah, so I'm just saying, we keep talking about the healing circumstances or healing properties or healing, all of the possibilities that are actually healing people, and it's all about frequencies, though, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, if people don't understand what we're talking about, when we talk about frequencies, you know, there's a spiritual aspect to it. Don't get me wrong on that, because everything, as far as I'm concerned, is there's a lot more to this world than meets the eye. But if you actually could take a sewing needle, and you could take that sewing needle, and you had a way that you could physically stretch that sewing needle out from, say, Florida to New York, all right? And you look at this sewing needle, it's not a solid object like you think it is. There's a lot of activity going on down in there. These things are vibrating and humming around, and just by their action and what they're doing, of how fast they're doing it would determine what frequency range that sewing needle would actually be at. And so if you could actually scale yourself down to actually look at any object that's on this earth, you would see that it's not really a solid object. We call it solid because our hand don't go through there, but our body is at a different frequency than that table that you're pounding on. All right, so you can't fall through it. But if you could take the change, the frequency range of that table, you could put your hand right through it. Wouldn't be nothing, not to it, because now you're at a higher frequency than that table is. So what seemed to be at one point in time about science fiction is now starting to be proven as science fact. So when we're talking about these frequency ranges, it's science. Tesla talked about it. He said that, man, if you could understand what was going on with this, there were certain types of, and you could physically figure this out by yourself. There are sound frequencies that will cause a physical reaction in your body. All right, like when some people can stand people putting fingers down a chalkboard, other people it just sends chills up their spine. Some people get physically ill when they hear somebody running their fingers down a chalkboard. And so that tells you that between that acoustic wave that just happened across the room at the chalkboard, transferred all the way to your ear, going in through your mind, and your mind saying, oh no, I ain't having this, it actually sends a physical reaction through your body. That's a simple example. You know, and how that a sound wave can actually affect a physical object. You know, the opera singer in the crystal glass. Everybody's probably seen that before. The opera singer matches the resonance of that glass and is able to disrupt that structure of that glass to the extent that one tone, one little pitch over the top of that, once they reach that resonance and get that thing ringing, one little pitch over it is enough to shatter that glass. And that's what the Rife did. It was able to go in there and target specific bad cells as opposed to good cells by the type of frequency. And part of his experiments, according to my understanding of what he did, was he would take different bacteria and put them into a petri dish, and he would introduce a certain frequency to it that it would kill one, and the other one would sit right there and not be harmed at all. And so that's what Barbara's talking about when she said it was able to kill off the bad cells and not mess with the good ones. That's not chemotherapy. That's real medicine, as far as I'm concerned.
Yep.
So you know what? There's so many things about frequencies, energies, and frequencies that are so key to the health and well-being of everything, I think. And you know, we're talking about the machines that they're creating frequencies to heal. We're talking about sound and tone, chanting, and you know, you have what do they call that? The solfeggio hertz, the hertz, symbols.
Yep.
These, and the meaning of these ancient symbols, how each tone has its unique vibration, and how these are harmonizing and balancing processes used. These go back so far in ancient time, and I can't remember which the original frequency or solfeggio frequency was. It 396 hertz. So this has been changed. Remember, some people decided. Who was it that decided to change all instruments to be, I guess, tuned to a certain frequency? Was it called? I'm trying to find this circumstance that happened a long time ago that shifted the instruments that we play today into a different frequency. Not the original frequencies. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Well, I know what you're talking about, but I just can't bring it up to mind right now. That's a job for Google.
Well, I'm trying to find it because there's all...
What you're talking about, frequencies and so forth, being disruptive and so forth, it brought back a thought, an experience that I had many, many years ago when I was a lot younger. And I was on the job. It was in Bowdoin, Kentucky, and we were building a Corvette assembly plant. Anyway, in building it, they had this machine that was making this unbelievably horrible pitch sound, and it was driving a lot of people bonkers, man. All of a sudden, I don't know why, but I tried matching the frequency with my whistle, and I kept going up and down in frequency. So finally I hit the exact same thing, and it was like harmonizing. I went right with the sound with my whistle. And all of a sudden, the moment I started whistling in that exact same vibration, there was no irritability at all. I mean, I matched my body with the sound, and there was nothing. I mean, it was, and after that, from then on, whenever it would start to bother me, I would just whistle right along with it for just a few minutes, and everything would be cool for a day or two.
That makes sense.
Well, our bodies, you know, resonate with different frequencies, and which can be measured depending on your health and well-being to see what's really going on. So, for instance, the frequency of the human body, I guess across the board, supposedly, is 62 to 68 hertz. And then the body resonates frequency between 62 and 72 hertz when it's healthy. So it would be different when it's not healthy. You know? And you can... There are also people that are working with frequencies. You know, that Rife machine is a frequency. Food has a frequency. The juices that my friend was using, those plants have frequency because they're natural, untainted, you know, organics. So all of these things have frequency. Our tone or sound that we can make.
What you're saying right now goes right along with what Shaziz said a minute ago, that everything vibrates at a certain frequency. And to take the something like a bad bacteria or good bacteria, to isolate that frequency, and like with the crystal glass, a certain pitch will cause it to shatter, but not harm other things around it. And that makes a lot of sense to me.
As crazy as this sounds, the old Star Trek shows and Star Trek The Next Generation, their doctor in there used a device that essentially emitted a frequency where they could heal a bone just by waving the doggone machine over the top of it to get that to, you know, back in order again. Now, what we're talking about sounds like what they were doing in that movie, but it has scientific footing. I mean, it's scientifically plausible from everything that we understand about how this world works.
Right.
So Red, or I'm sorry, Gaz says the frequencies were changed in the 16th century as far as he recalls in his research. So that sounds familiar to me, but it's something to something I think of importance to you know, research. Why were these natural frequencies shifted? Knowing, you know, what they did then, of course, there's a reason they knew about the frequencies and they were measuring the frequencies, and nature has its original frequency as also does our bodies. So why was it changed? That's one question. Who changed it? That's the other. Just saying. And how can we today, with learning more about frequencies and the significance of harmonizing our own frequencies, how can we, you know, move forward and to create more health and well-being, and be aware also of the technology that is affecting our frequencies, how to move in the world with all of this stuff? And now you have this situation in China, and first it appeared in Cuba, where the people in the U.S. Embassy were being affected by some type of frequency that was affecting their brains. Do you recall that?
Yeah, I know what you're talking about, but to answer part of your deal, it just dawns on me to put my conspiracy hat on.
I thought we had it on already.
Well, a sick population is a profitable population. So if you can keep everybody sick, you know, and just basically treat their symptoms and make them feel good, well, the doctor, he made me feel good, so I'm going back because he knows what he's doing. But they still haven't realized that they could have cured with natural remedies doggone common cold probably hundreds of years ago, if not longer. And so why would I want to tell you that this could possibly work? Why would I want to tell you about hyperbaric chambers if I want to sell you all these other treatments and methods and medicines? A sick population is a profitable population.
And well, the general human healthy frequency is within the range of 60 to 72 hertz. And when it drops to lower levels, it enables the appearance of a variety of diseases. So at the level of 58 hertz, diseases like colds and flu are more likely to appear, and on a much lower level, 42 hertz, cancer appeared in quite many humans in this study. So how do we find, can we find where we are resonating on our frequency? If not, because we don't have a machine to do that, then how can we take responsibility or start moving towards keeping our frequency at the 62, 72 hertz level or even higher? I'm just saying.
All right, well, here's something that might blow your doors off. It just kind of dawned on me. Well, you're saying 62 to 72 hertz is a good range. Every bit of our electricity here in the United States is at 60 hertz, and overseas it's at 50 hertz, so that's well below that range. So anytime you're in within that range, and if that magnetic field is affecting you the way it does every other magnetic field, then you would be resonating around about 60 hertz, which is a lower range of what your normal range would be according to the numbers you gave me.
Which makes you more susceptible.
Yeah, it makes you more chance that you're going to get sick. What if they ramp that the electricity frequency up to that particular range to where now being next to your toaster would be healthy as opposed to the opposite?
So I was wondering what a smart meter contains an RF transmitter.
It's probably,
right?
Probably way higher, though. It's probably up in...
Well, it's 902 megahertz.
Yeah.
Which would really squirrel your brain.
Yeah. So simply in that area, you're standing not necessarily to the equivalence of a microwave itself, because microwaves, they're not as dangerous as people think, because as long as they're contained inside that box, everything's all right. But if you would stand directly within that microwave, you would do just what the water does. You'd boil because you're, say, 3/4 water. So, you know, you obviously
don't
want to be that.
But it does it, but it affects your food. A microwave oven is 2,450 megahertz.
Yeah, but that's, see, the research that I've done on microwaves, if you take a microwave magnetron out of the casing, and I did this, and I was actually kind of concerned because I thought, well, you know, I've heard all the scare stories about microwaves. But I did this, and I was actually, it was kind of funny, standing on the other side of my lab with a remote switch and turning this thing on and ducking down behind my deal so that I wouldn't get irradiated. And I had a glass of water sitting about a foot away from the actual magnetron. And so I'm sitting here doing this, and I shut it off. I go over there, put my finger in the water, nothing. It's as cool as it was when I started. So I scooted a little bit closer, repeated the experiment, and went back over there and put my finger in the water, nothing. Same temperature as it was when I started. So I continued this process until I got this this glass of water 2 inches or less in front of, right directly in front of that magnetron, and fired the thing back up again, then left it running for a few seconds, and then went back over there, and I'll be doggone, about 2 inches away, it will begin to heat that water.
Well, actually, it says here that your microwave, where is it? Oh, it just went to your microwave oven operates at a frequency of 2.45 gigahertz.
Yeah, but see, the thing about it is, when you have an understanding of what a microwave actually is, it's a super fast short wave that the moment it goes out and begins to hit any atmosphere, that wavelength starts to change. It starts to slow down because it's now meeting resistance. At some point, 2 inches away from that magnetron, it is no longer a microwave, and the only reason why it's able to do what it does inside of your microwave oven is because when that wave is coming down what they call a wave guide, it guides these waves down into a metal box, and so it's bouncing around inside there, right? And the only resistance that it's actually coming across is whatever you put inside there as far as the food or the container that you put in the food. And so when this microwave is bouncing around inside there, it's making its way back and forth through water molecules, rocking them so rapidly that it produces friction, which in turn produces heat and cooks your food. Now, outside that microwave, when it ain't got that environment to bounce around in on, then once it starts hitting into the atmosphere, it begins to slow down immediately. And the only way that you can get a microwave to travel further is by putting a wave behind a wave behind a wave behind a wave until you can keep bumping it out, kind of like they do with radio to get it to go further. But if you look real carefully on the front of your microwave oven door, you'll see basically the equivalence of a Faraday cage. It's a little bitty tiny holes in there. It's a metal screen that goes in front of it. And what that is to do is when that wave is coming through there, it will be disrupted by that metal. And by the time it comes out of the face of that microwave, it's no longer a microwave anymore.
But what is it doing to your food? You see, vibrating at incredible speeds that you're talking.
Well, understandably, it's probably changing the physical structure of your food and killing off any kind of natural. That's why they say it's better to eat raw vegetables as opposed to cooked, even boiled vegetables. But when it's in the microwave, you'll notice that some foods actually kind of turn to mush when they come out of the microwave.
So, I mean, it is. It's basically, it's again, it's back to the confusing the natural structure frequency of the food.
Yeah.
It's affecting it.
So by the time you get it into your body, it doesn't have all the nutrition value that it would have had if it had been cooked even by boiling it or by some other method that would break that structure up the way it does, even if it broke it up at a lesser, you see what I'm saying, the lesser of two evils kind of thing. Better off just eating it raw, as far as vegetables can go. That way you can get all the natural nutrients out of it. But if you are going to cook it, there are other better methods than a microwave. A microwave is fast, and it can taste good out of there, but even if you got good sensitive taste bud, you'll notice a difference between how it tastes when it's cooked into the microwave as opposed to cooked on a gas stove or even cooked over charcoal outside on a barbecue grill, or even cooked over natural woods like hickory or walnut or stuff like that. It happened. I lost Skype. Ed, burn it. Let me try to get them back here. See what happened there. Anyway, yeah, there's definitely a difference there. I don't know what happened. Skype just stopped and I lost them. So, basically what I'm trying to say to everybody is, we got all these options available, we got all this technology ready, and I don't know why this is not working to get this call back. Let me try it again. I don't know what happened. It ain't even doing the ringtone thing. Ed, burn it. Well, I'll keep tinkering around with that, see if I can get it back. But anyway, we got all this technology. We're here in the year 2018. There's all kinds of options available out there that people aren't necessarily aware of. I'm going to reboot Skype and see if that helps. Doo-doo-doo-doo. This is bad for... What the heck is going on there? Let's try this. All right, so folks, we're having an issue with Skype. I lost Barbara and Raymond. I'm rebooting Skype to see if that'll solve the problem. the doggone thing is start up. Try this now. Internet connection problem. That figures. All right, well, if you're listening in on the chat room, throw me something in there. Let me know that you're hearing what's going on this part. It says I'm still encoding, so I must be fine on that. Let's see if I can get this resolved. Alright, in the meantime, I think I will throw on a quick tune and see if I can get to, so you guys don't have to listen to me sit here talking to myself. Stay tuned, you're listening to Mad Science. Sorry I disrupted that song in case you was getting into it. So Barbara come up with a question from Gaz about 5G, and I'm hearing a lot of concerns in the conspiracy world about how there's a lot of different things that they can do with that particular range that don't exclude making you highly uncomfortable or even transmitting information into your head and that kind of stuff. So yeah, it gives me a lot of concern, because if you're looking at the number of towers that they're putting up everywhere for these supposedly better networks, that would give somebody an infrastructure that if you like said something you didn't want, they didn't want you to say, you know, maybe like for example, we just got booted off of Skype. Maybe they didn't like the conversation we were having, but my internet was still working, but Skype just up and bam, we were off of there. I was like, what the heck is going on? I think we lost Raymond. Barbara, you still there?
I am. I'm looking at this. So the thing about, I can remember Patty and I talked about this 5G when it first did some tests over there somewhere across the world in some remote little farm area. And the people in the community, it was a small community, you know, it's sort of like, let's test these whatevers on people who don't have contact with the outside world. nobody will know what's going on, right?
Yeah.
We can test this on the public. We can test this on the people, and nobody will know. Nobody will care. But anyway, apparently they did these tests with these 5G, and the farmers in the community were freaking out because their animals were going berserk. That's all that I know about the beginning of 5G. But people are really concerned about this. I mean, I don't know too much about it, but apparently it's a faster level, higher level, faster frequency, which I guess when you're talking about microwaves, what the frequency does is it's so rapid in its processing, you know, it's supposed to help us to be faster on the internet. Do you want that, or do you want to have clarity of mind and health and well-being? That's only my question, I guess.
Well, there's a website out there that says about, it's called electricsense.com, I believe. Yeah, electricsense.com, and there's like 5G possible concerns, or 11 reasons to be concerned. I'll just read a little bit of this. It says, the dangers of 5G, 11 reasons to be concerned. The USA is currently leading the way on 5G at the June 2016 press conference, where Federal Communication Commission, FCC for short, head Tom Wheeler announced the opening of a low, mid to high spectrum. There was no mention of health effects whatsoever, but dangers are real. Thousands of studies in links below linked low-level wireless radio frequency radiation exposure to long list of adverse biological effects, including DNA single and double strand breaks, oxidative damage, disruption to cell metabolism, increased blood-brain barrier permeability, melatonin reduction, disruption to brain glucose metabolism, and generation of stress proteins. This is just a few that's on there, but I'll go ahead and go throw that link into the chat rooms and all that kind of stuff, so you can read up for it.
Well, there's something here. You know, when I do some research, I jump immediately on to a link that says conspiracy debunked, because I know that it's probably somebody speaking the truth, that the who's are calling a conspiracy. So I just found this one. This is about, you know, let me see. It can get exhausting to keep track of all the counter conspiracy theories that keep coming up from President Trump's allies. Many of them are in the employ of Rupert Murdoch. I don't know about that, but so to the end, the release of the transcript of Glenn Simpson's Senate testimony, Republicans initially opposed the release, blah, blah. I don't know, wait, I thought I was doing a 5G thing here. Hold on, where did we go? Oh, we went. I wanted to do a, looking at this, oh, this is one, never mind. This is weird. The New York Times had this thing on, which I thought was the 5G. So, never mind, folks, this was another conspiracy. Okay, 5G, let me see. Now, Trump team considers nationalizing 5G network, and then you have a national security issue, 5G, why is that? Then you have Trump prevented China from acquiring the 5G, a system.
Well, I can address the possible national security portion of it. And this is why it could potentially be a national security risk. At the ranges that they're talking about, you know, either high or low, either one, if somebody had access to, you know, hackers that could get into certain servers and, you know, through via the internet, you could actually launch an attack by, you know, changing the frequency range to a more harmful one, or even using the one at an amplified, pace, if you understand what I'm saying, basically crank up the volume. And
yeah,
you'd have a whole bunch of people instantaneously having a whole lot of problems. You know, that frequency
right.
range, would it bleed over electronics and disrupt electronics? Would it... would it interfere with communications like radios and TV and all that kind of stuff? So You could, on a small scale, create a little bit of a disruption, and on a larger scale, really attack people individually with that kind of technology. And if it's, okay, if it's connected into the power grid and smart meters and all that kind of jazz that they got going on, I'd be seriously concerned about it for, you know, that power range. Basically, like, right, aiming a microwave oven magnetron on a large scale at people. There's a reason why they, around those radio towers, there's a doggone sign that says that you need to stay so many feet back away from it, because at 50,000...
All right, yes. Listen, I can remember... I can remember in the 60s, mid to, I don't know when it was, when the cell towers started going up, or the big, those big towers started being run through the country, from end to end, and people living near them were saying things were happening to them, and of course they were nutcases right off the bat, and, now we have this kind of technology that is getting more and more concerning, you know, right down to the, you know, smartphones, cell phones, the 5G, and all this stuff. Since we realize that we are beings of energy and that we exude different frequencies depending upon our health and well-being, that every part of our body, all our organs and everything exude an energy, emanate an energy or frequency, and now you have these man-made frequencies, you know, intruding or, you know, being activated, and you have, let's say you have nature's frequency, human frequency, and now you have this technology frequency that is completely opposite or different or intrusive or opposing, I would say. I don't know. So it is concerning, but I want to give you two messages here. Gaz says that he'll send you some documents on this, I guess. And Charles Two Dogs says he's going to send you a picture of the Tree of Peace.
Cool.
For your site that you asked for. And I popped in a link on smartphones causing cancer, big wireless, doesn't want you to know. This is another conspiracy site, of course, so if you don't like conspiracies or you believe it's a bunch of bunk, don't listen. But I always choose these sites first because, and then I assess. I kind of like look at, you know, both sides, right? But do you remember when people were saying that the cell phones could possibly cause brain tumors and so on? And that was, again, conspiracy nutcases. And now, yeah, I think it's being proven that that's true. But they're talking about thousands of other things that cause far more cancer than 5G smartphones is being, you know, basically what's happening to us.
Yeah.
And so they're having spikes of cancer that are undocumented now throughout the country that are happening that we're looking at. You know, suddenly there's various studies being done on spikes of certain cancers, and it seems to be around these various technologies, I'm just saying.
Well, you're not wrong in saying that either, because, look, people at one point in time, when you talked about how, like, back in the day when people started saying they were hearing voices in their head, people thought they were nuts, right? Well, then they come out with this deal and they show that there's a sign, an actual working sign that a company was using,
yeah,
to promote a sci-fi movie or something like that, and they were sending this signal out of this sign, not an audible sound, but a signal out that would resonate in your brain, and you would literally hear voices in your head. This is science.
Yeah.
This is science fiction turned to science fact right before your very eyes. And so, who's to say that with all the different secret government agencies out there that are always doing these, like, MK-Ultra-style mind control deals, where they're not trying to perfect this kind of deal, and they get it down to perfection. I would be interested to find out at what frequency range that sign was working at, and how compatible that sign would be to this new 5G network, to where if you wanted to broadcast a signal, nobody would hear anything.
Well, if you go into a category of saying, I hear voices in my head, basically the Mental Health Foundation and the psychologists and all that stuff, they have the answer.
Yep.
Okay, it's got all to do with that. It's got nothing to do with technology or any possible interference or intrusions into our world by some electromagnetic beam, HARP, or whatever they're doing now, that, you know, or what's going on in, had been going on in Cuba and now China, with the people in the embassy having hearing voices in their head, but also having these brain issues. So, you know, basically they're not saying that these people are need psychotherapy or that they're schizophrenic because they're hearing voices or that they're acting weird. They are not saying that today. They're saying something is, they believe that this is something in to do with technology.
Well, let me point something out while you're on that, is that the Chinese are really good with electronics.
Huh. Right. Well, so what do you do when you hear voices in your head, you know? I've been reading very interesting reports recently within the past year or so, because I find this fascinating. When I notice a spike in something and a trend, let's call it a trend, in the population, and the trend seemed to be rising in all different parts of the country about people committing vile or atrocious things upon others, and the headline would state that, but then within the text it would say this so-and-so person claimed they were hearing voices in their heads. And you have some of those shooter incidences where we've seen that, and then other things, you know, spiking up where people did something awful and they said, well, I heard this voice in my head. And that caught my attention because, you know, that, of course, that's very concerning, but we also know about the MK Ultras. We know about this, and this is coming into a circumstance recently about that shooter in that, where was it? Just another shooter went into a newspaper office that just recently happened. I don't know, maybe you guys know, just 2 days, 3 days ago.
Yeah, I heard about it, but I didn't look a whole lot into it.
Well, because now it's being looked at from, of course, the conspiracy nutcases, that this is something to look at, that there's some certain things about this guy who was involved in some therapy, some psychological or psychologist therapy that seems to be questionable. I don't know the full story, but I'm just looking at this because I find it very intriguing and fascinating. And it's questionable is what I'm saying. And what's going on with all of us today with our health, our well-being, our emotions, our physical health, our mental health, and so on. You know, I think there have been reports on, again, on fluoride and how it dulls your brain or affects your thinking, your common sense, or the ability to think clearly. We have all these things affecting us, and so I just find it very concerning. And also, I think that we should also really start paying attention to how we can actually raise our frequencies, create our own health and well-being. You know, we're talking about that with our foods, with certain choices of, health wise, as far as like if you do have an illness and so on and so forth. I'm just looking at all this stuff instead of getting freaked out about it, because everything seems to be coming at us, right?
Well, you know what? Maybe you have to get a little crazy and go like the tinfoil hat wearing deal and start building clothing with Faraday cages involved in it, hats and shirts and stuff like that.
Well, there are ways to raise your frequency and your vibration. I mean, people are always talking about that, you know.
Yeah.
There's certain foods, for instance, that you can eat that are really important to utilize. And then there's, of course, your thinking, the way you think about things, you know, various things. I mean, people use magnets, people are using pyramids, people are using copper. I don't know all about that stuff, but, right?
Yeah.
And the inner creates the outer, we know that, so we do have the ability to affect and impact ourselves. And what we, you know, what we focus on, the foods that we eat, even if we use sound and tone and tuning or toning, what they call, which is raising the vibration or doing the sacred tones that were very ancient, you know, the O, I, E, I, A, all those relate to your chakra points, every one of the chakras, the seven chakras within us. And by the way, do you know that the earth herself has seven chakras? Did you know that?
Uh-uh.
Are you interested?
Well, I'll probably have to get interested at a different time because we're getting down there close. We got about maybe 10 minutes.
Oh, yeah, we are, aren't
but,
we?
I just looked
at so the question. I say the question is, I'm just going to say this. The question is, why would creation have seven points on the earth that are chakra points, and we humans are created with chakras, seven chakras in the body? So I'm just throwing that out there.
Well,
so,
we'll have to do a show at some point where you could go through and explain all your knowledge of what about that. I'm blown away by this whole deal because I know nature is a good teacher, and nature has all kinds of healing properties if you could only know how this thing works. And we got a lot of knowledge out there. There's tons and tons of knowledge out there. It drives me crazy because I'm looking at this one of these fluoride articles, and it said the toxic import from China hidden in this everyday beverage. The Chinese don't consider this product safe to use in their own country, but they are more than willing to export it to gullible Americans to consume in this beverage every day, amazingly. And it's got a little read more thing about it, but it's just like, I know that there are some countries that basically have banned things like fluoride and chlorine or whatever in their water systems. And there are certain things that they allow that we don't allow, vice versa. And I'm wondering why it isn't that the whole entire world hasn't been able to get on the same page. There's tons of research and every different thing out there, you know. The Food and Drug Administration is supposed to be there to protect the people, yet you'll find things that made it on the market like saccharin and aspartame and stuff like that that had shown that it could cause cancer in lab rats and probably more than likely would do the same for humans as well. And then later on down the line, when somebody started complaining about it and they start noticing there was a significant rise in people getting sick, well, suddenly that's when it's time to take it off the market. But then they just rename it and put it as something else on back on the market. So if a conspiracy guy had his hat on, he would say that they want to kill you, you know, the depopulation portion of it. I mean, you're either doing something because you're unaware, ignorant of the results, or you're doing it intentionally, you're trying to kill somebody. How many more ways could it be? You just made a mistake. Once you recognize the mistake, you took it off the market, but in the meantime, you harmed a lot of people. There's, you know, basic science and observation and testing and all that kind of stuff, and they use that testing for a reason why there's a whole lot of alternative medicines that can't make it to the market because they haven't been properly tested. They can't make it past the Food and Drug Administration. But the problem is, if they ain't tested by the mainstream science, and they're tested by the average, you know, what they call a pseudoscience. I hate that word. It just drives me nuts because it discounts anybody's research or studies right out of the gate. It's not classified as real science. Even though it shows measurements, results, and repeatable, you know, experimentation and stuff like that, that this truly has benefits. That's why I'm surprised that the hyperbaric oxygen therapy ever even got noticed at all. But now it's starting to make its way into the mainstream because doggone it, athletes, mainstream athletes, and actors, movie actors and actresses are utilizing this, and people are seeing, hey, well, you're using this therapy, what's the deal, you know? The average Joe ain't been using it. So until the mainstream doctor says it's cool, until the your favorite movie star says it's cool, or your favorite athlete is promoting it, you're not going to use it. You see what I mean? That's a crazy.
Well, it's about every. It's the same thing about every healing properties that we know of. I mean, just take, just take the healing properties of four herbs that the Ojibwe people knew have known about for centuries that heals cancer, consisting of rhubarb and various other, you know, natural products. And it's only four herbs, and yet it heals cancer. But you'll never, that will never be on the mainstream information.
No.
Put
the conspiracy hat back on. Why? Why not? Why wouldn't they want that there, Barbara?
Well, listen, you know, we know this is a very big business. Sickness, ill health, disease is a very big business. I think about it. I mean, we know that there has been cancer, healing for cancer for how many years? We know that.
Yeah. Well,
and so the authorities, because this is what we're looking at, the society, the system authorities will not, they are out to make money. They don't really care about us. We have a system of authoritarian people who are sitting on the top of the pyramid, and we're all down there below. We're the serfs. You know, we're the common people,
yeah,
the commoners.
They're the keepers of knowledge, the kings and the queens.
Well, they say they are the keepers of knowledge. You see, they usurp the knowledge and the wisdom, and they believe they are above all of us because we're the common serfs. We don't have the capacity. This is written, and I can't quote it right now, but I'm just paraphrasing that it is written by some of these people that we, the common people, or the commoners, don't have the capacity for critical thinking. We don't have the ability to lead. We don't have the, you know, common sense. They are the ones. They have placed themselves at the top of the pyramid as the authorities over all. They don't care about the common people. They are in their club. We will never be allowed in their club. They don't care for you. They may come out every once in a while out of their castle and ride around in a carriage with horses and gold and all that stuff and wave at you, and everybody lines up and goes goo-goo and gaga and ooh and ah and screaming and crying and tears running down their faces because these so-called queens, kings, duchesses, princes, and dukes, you know, look your way or wave at you, and then you go home to your little house over there and you get back to your job that's killing you or the alcohol that's killing you or the drugs that are killing you and your despair and your... You know, but you have a king and a queen that you follow.
Yep.
Well, we have the same thing over here. We have a king and a queen that we follow, and all the president's men and all the president's women. That's a club. They don't want us in their club. We'll never be in their club. They have designated themselves as the kings and the queens and the authorities over us. So when you say, well, why don't they allow these natural healing awareness to help people, they don't care.
No, they don't.
They want money. They don't care about healing us. They don't care about helping us. It's all talk. It's all rhetoric. They don't give a crap.
Yeah,
they're in their own club.
Well, let me repeat this so everybody out there can get some sort of deal what you are to the mainstream and the governments and corporations of the world. They said, as of 2011, the Environmental Protection Agency set the value of a human life at $9.1 million.
Yeah.
That's a lot of money. You'll never see it in your lifetime, but they say that's what you're worth. Meanwhile, the Food and Drug Administration put it at $7.9 million, and the Department of Transportation figure was around $6 million. That's what they say you're worth. But you're not worth... And when they say that you're worth that, that's how much you could generate from insurance and taxes and medicine. Every time you get sick, somebody's getting paid. So whenever they turn around, everything you do in this world, especially here in the United States, every single thing that you do, somebody gets paid. Whether you're going to the movies or the grocery store or whatever. So they say you're worth that much money. Not to mention the fact that if you follow into the tinfoil hat wearing conspiracy world, there's a birth certificate out there, which is essentially like a trading deal for the stock market, and actually has supposedly an account attached to it that is worth a lot of money. And there's also other things that are related to government documents, such as a Social Security card that's supposed to be attached to a retirement fund for when you get to retirement age, that you'll still have some income coming in. So regardless of whether you're old and feeble and on Social Security, even when you're paying that Social Security, the corporation's still getting paid. So that's where they're coming up with the doggone money that the human life is worth. But when it comes down to whenever somebody kills your family, unless you're lucky enough to file a wrongful death lawsuit and actually get a bunch of money as a reward for your loss, well, then guess what? You'll never see that $9 million or $7 million or $6 million that either one of those three agencies said that you're valued at. And so, with that said, if you want knowledge on how to heal yourself, you're going to have to look into things like Barbara's talking about, things that Raymond's talked about, and myself and other people from other networks. You, the people, are the true power structure. And if you decide that you want to take all this knowledge and share it amongst themselves, you're going to find out you're going to get a reaction from the system, because they don't like it when you're on your own as far as alternative energy, alternative medicine, because every time you take away that much power from them per person, if you're worth that much per person on the grid, then how much are you worth per person off the grid? Off the grid, you're worthless to them, because you're not making them any money unless you're donating to their cause. That's why if you keep feeding the beast that's eating you alive, you're going to keep on seeing the same thing that we've been talking about on these shows for the last several years or more. It's ridiculous.
Well, here's the word thinking about this, the common people. Often we say the common people, right? And I'm thinking, wait a second, what is common? What does it really mean? So the high-ranking people say we are far too common. We are uncouth, vulgar, coarse, rough, boorish. We are ill-bred, uncivilized, unrefined, unsophisticated, lowly, low-born, low-class, inferior, proletarian, plebeian, and low-ranking, because we are not of their class, you see. They have designated themselves as the elite and the high mucky mucks who look down upon us as the common people or the serfs. And we have elevated them into this position ourselves. Really, we have. By bowing down to them, by licking their toes and their feet, getting all bent out of shape to see a movie star or to be this or touched by that one or have their signature or have their whatever it is to follow them, we've allowed this. All over the world, basically, the elite present themselves. They are the authorities over us, and we have allowed this. But they look at us as vulgar, coarse, low-class, inferior, low-born. Okay, low ranking, we're unrefined, we can't think for ourselves, we don't have any abilities or common knowledge or wisdom or whatever, they have it all, and we've allowed this ourselves. We've really allowed this by, and I'm going to say it again, it just strikes me as amazing in this day and age how people are so out there on the streets with their sleeping bags for days because the king, the queen, the Dutch, the Dukas, and whomever they are coming out of their castle to wave at you in their gold throne, you know, horse-driven carriages and blah, blah, blah. Who gives a baloney or crap about this royal wedding? But people do, and this is what, you know, they're living vicariously through these people, through these movie stars, and they're not living a happy life. They're basically subjected to the level of being a serf, of being a low-ranking commoner. That's what we are.
All right, well,
and we've allowed that.
I just posted a link into the chat room from theglobalist.com, and theglobalist.com is Rethinking Globalization. Well, there's a book that I guess is on Amazon. It's called Wait, The Art of Science of Delay. And I guess the author of this particular article said the takeaways from this book is, even if we assume a human life today is worth between 7 million to 5 million, or to 7 million to 9 million, what should a future life be worth? And how much should we pay today to prevent an event that would result in the loss of 10 billion human lives in 500 years? Over the years, researchers have reached a consensus that a value of $1.5 million is too much, or is too low. So I'll let that sink in, and you could click on the link and read it up and try to grasp an understanding of what they said in that in those takeaways from that book or whatever. Just go read the book or just read the article or whatever. But essentially, what's it worth to prevent all those people from being killed? What's it worth to prevent one person from being killed? Now, you'll have people that will actually say, oh, when they get to a certain age and you're spending all this money, it's a waste of money because they already lived their life, just whack them anyway. You know how ridiculous that is?
Well, we have today, which is a whole show, globalism, nationalism, and patriotism. I mean, this is the big issues of today. And there's questions, which is bad and which is good? And I don't think you can do that. I don't think you can say, well, globalism is bad, or globalism is good, or nationalism is bad. I think, you know, it's complex. It's something that, you know, that we have to really look at very clearly.
Well,
but
listen,
they're putting
if globalism was you and me and all our brothers and sisters around the world coming together for a common goal to, you know, solve problems, but that's not it.
That's not what it is.
Yeah, we still have the hierarchy of the kings and queens that want to
rule
the show. They're not wanting to listen to us. They're not wanting to listen to our research or our knowledge. They're not wanting you to be cured from colds and
The question is, okay, globalists don't want any walls to protect the country or to keep out murderers, rapists, or child sex traffickers, but do I want a wall to keep out people who are suffering and really need help? No. So we're in this situation that is really very difficult. We have patriotism, we have nationalism, we have globalism, we have people taking sides on these levels. It's not about Republican, Democrat anymore. It's really about this. Where are we going? You know, what are we being pushed towards? Because we are being pushed towards an end result that you know, may not be very pretty at all, and we're all thinking we're standing for something good because I'm a patriot, or I'm a nationalist, or I'm a globalist. I want the best for everyone. I want everyone to have free medicine. We're all brothers and sisters. We're one people of this world. Is that globalism? Is that nationalism?
I want to be on the side of the people, but at the same sense, it's like this. I would love to see us produce a utopia together. I would really love to see this. But unfortunately, under the current circumstances of what we find ourselves in with all these little skirmishes with other countries and all these wars and craziness going on out there, and even what happens in our own backyards, our neighbors or our countries or whatever, we are in the position right now to where we can actually say, oh yeah, let's ban all of our weapons of defense or anything like that, and let's just all love each other and get along, because we're still have people in society who are willing to kill you and steal from you instead of doing the hard labor such as work. So if the companies out there figured out they can manipulate you via drugs or 5G networks or be able to do anything to change your mind or control you or steer your decision into their direction of their agenda, then you think they're not going to do that? That's why you have such a hard time getting alternative medicines and alternatives to the system out there, because they actually pay people, quite literally pay people, to go out there and debunk anything that sounds too good that might interrupt the system. They'll either grab it up and call it a national security risk, or they will find a way to buy it up and bury it up, or they will find a way to shut you up like they did Stan Myers, like they did John Bedini and his brother, like they did so many other people out there who came up with ideas, and even all the way back to Tesla, where they pretty much government took the papers that they wanted, and the rest of it, everybody else was just pure myth. What was Tesla? They tried to make him look stupid. They tried to make him eccentric. They tried to tell all kinds of stories, and shenanigans about him, so that people would, some of them would like, I would believe in it, and some of them won't believe in it, because it's just like anything else out there. You put a label on somebody, you put that in somebody's mind, and the tinfoil hat is the first thing you see when I start telling you that your government don't have your best interest at heart. That's that.
Well, here's two things I'll leave with you. You know, the question today is, which side are you on, you know? And we're being met with that. Which side are you on? But here's something. I'm going to read two things and see how they make you feel. The question is, does one speak to you or does one strike you as being vaguely offensive? So here's the first one. Imagine there's no countries. It isn't hard to do. Nothing to kill or die for, and no religion, too. Imagine all the people living life in peace. You may say that I'm a dreamer, but I'm not the only one. I hope someday you'll join us and the world will be as one. Now here's the second paragraph. It is not true that human activity can be released from all restraint. Man's characteristic privilege is that the bond he accepts is not physical, but moral. That is, meaning social. He is governed not by a material environment brutally imposed upon him, but by a conscience superior to his own, the superiority of which he feels.
The first part of that sound like, I can't remember.
It is.
It was John Lennon or...
John Lennon's Imagine.
Yeah.
I'm a dreamer. Maybe I'm a dreamer, but I know I'm not the only one.
That's right. They put a lot of truth in a lot of music that, you know, people overlook. I'm not into the music to sitting there talking all hate and discontent.
But listen now, here's the thing. That song, which I love, and I think it's beautiful, and I think it says something to me on one level. But, so, someone here who's writing this is saying this is a good candidate for being the anthem of the globalists.
Yep.
It's a progressive in that it looks forward to a utopian future. It is anti-nationalist and anti-religious. It is, in essence, anti-parochial. And anything that divides people into separate groups or identities is bad. Removing borders and divisions is good.
Yeah, but the crazy thing about it is the ends justify the mean. They use the separation and basically keeping people pitted against each other in order to try to reach that agenda. So they're going to split you up, order out of chaos, make you fight amongst each other, come in with the answer. That's what they're trying to do.
That's right.
That's common
yes.
sense.
So we're in this dilemma or this opportunity. Either it's a dilemma for us or an opportunity, and I believe opportunity does arrive out of dilemmas and challenges and so on. So I think it's up to us. Here we are back to our collective, individual and collective choices that we make, the free will that we have been given. And if you want to stand with the people on the street screaming at each other and spitting on each other because of some political person that you don't like or another political person's you know, privilege or choice, if you want to do that, that's up to you. That's what you're choosing, but that's what they want. That's what they... This is what the plan is to get us spitting at each other, screaming at each other for, you know, either you're a Democrat or you're Republican, or you're for this or you're for that, you're for a border wall, you're for not, or you're for whatever it is. They want us pitted against each other, and this is the nightmare that we have pushed ourselves, been pushed into, and we are following suit. And it's getting to be a point now where it's very concerning because we're reaching a level of a possible...
Where'd you go? Well, looked like I lost you there, Barbara. Well, folks, I hate to leave it like that, but I want you to do two things. Maybe three things. Maybe four things. Maybe one thing with a whole lot of different games. Go out there and study the rules for chess. Study the rules for checkers, Chinese checkers. Study the rules for all the different board games out there, Stratego, or whatever, that old one. You sank my battleship. I can't remember what the battleship, I guess that was it. Study the rules on that. And understand that those rules that they use, the kings and queens always put the pawns out there in order to do what it is that they do to us, in order to get by with it. See, I lost internet connection on that one computer over there. That's why. And this is what happens. But study those games, and then you'll understand how to play the game better. With all this information that we have access to, right now, we're at a crossroad. And we got to decide whether we, the people, are actually going to do something about it. There are medicines out there that don't get talked about. There are options available to us all. There are things that together we can take all these solutions, put all these pieces of the puzzle together, but it's going to take each one of us, all of us people, working together to do just that. Sorry I lost you there, Barbara. I don't know what's going on. We got the boot there for some reason on that particular computer, so we'll get it resolved. But in the meantime, folks, you've been listening to the Mad Science Show. If anything on this helps you out, pass this podcast around. Peace and love, everybody. Take care.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission: to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch.